service.
January 14th, Epsilon.
Ian Shane, Corps of Engineers, Portland District. Shane Scott, Public Power Council.
Gary Johnson, Corps of Engineers.
And I'm Bernard Clatt, Corps of Engineers. One thing I'd like to bring up right now is, I don't know if a lot of people have heard this or not, but I am going to division for a detail for 6 months. I'm replacing Paul Oker as the Environmental Stewardship Compliance Manager, whatever his title is. And Gary Johnson, who's come back to the Corps as a rehired annuitant, will be filling in for me, along with Tammy's going to come a little bit, her change her schedule more full-time. And then Robert Stansel will pick up the pieces if need be. Oh, yeah, he will. And that's really it. Thanks. Bye.
So you're leaving now?
I start next week.
Oh. So you're leaving now?
No. Unless you want me to leave. But I'll keep an eye on, you know, the policy guys. Clug still will be sitting next to me, so.
And this is?
Oh, yes.
I'd be Tammy Mackey.
Right. Tammy, being as sick as she was yesterday, slept all day and got up and made magic bars.
Which
they are quite magical.
But they're mine. You don't
really know. Yeah, we're actually, we don't plan to pass them.
They're like, you know how yesterday's were so rock hard? These are so soft.
That's what,
like
that's what these are. It's leftover from yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Those are like the fruit. I like those ones, but I understand some of you maybe didn't.
And folks on the phone?
Ben Hausman, Corps of Engineers, Bonneville Dam. Derek Frayer, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
And no Bill Hevland on the phone?
Noble?
Nope. Noble Hevland.
Noble.
All right. Let's see. Got to finalize the agenda today. You all have most likely have it in front of you. Any edits, additions to the agenda?
I did not get a chance to print out copies due to my state of affairs yesterday. Sorry.
You sent it out prior to Monday.
I did send it out, though, on Monday.
Okay.
When?
Monday. Even I got a copy.
It would have come out.
Does anybody need a copy? And I could probably go.
There's a copy right here.
I could probably go make a copy.
Okay.
At least of the key ones. Who needs a copy?
The first two pages.
Is this Gary?
Yeah.
Dave.
Well, I mean, I can get by without it.
You just
here,
got.
Here. What's on? I got two loose sheets.
Let's go make a couple.
I can go make a copy.
On the action items, we're going to go right to this one.
Okay.
Or actually, no. It looks like she's right on, so it shouldn't be a big deal.
Okay.
She wants to take off.
Okay. So, additional items. I think there's a couple things from yesterday that we were going to revisit, try to clean up today. And, let's see, one of those, do you want to list them specifically?
Are we going to deal with them before other?
No, we can add it to other. Is the overview water quality change form?
Bring breakfast set, yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Build a building.
001. And then we can just, I can give a quick update on McNary TSW timing of moving those. And I believe, Shane, you would like added under other an update on sea lion deterrence array test? Okay. So we'll add that under other. Anything else to add? Okay.
Spill Bay 15 hoist at Bonneville.
Okay. Got it. Okay. And minutes. For our December FOM. Anyone have any edits on that before we finalize and approve December minutes? Okay. Approved. All right. First thing is, before we get, normally this time we go through, we start with action items, but Martin is here today and primarily here to talk about Lamprey modifications being made at Ice Harbor and at McNairy. And so there's, Martin is going to, in general, provide an overview of what we're doing and then describe one or two action items, decision points for FPALM today. But before we jump to the decision point, I wanted to make sure everyone is up to speed on where we're at with making modifications for Lamprey improvements. And Derek Fryer's also on the phone to add provide any answers to questions. And Martin has a meeting in like an hour or less, so that's why we put him up to the front of the agenda. And so with that, we'll turn it over to Martin.
Okay. Most of you are aware that the Lamprey program, it's a joint district program between Walla Walla and Portland, and we coordinate very closely with the tribes on this program. And so I'm not going to get into any details of what Portland District is doing, and give you some background on what we're doing at Walla Walla. We're looking at immediate short-term fixes, simple things we can do to improve the ladders for adult passage. And then we also have another support that's a little more long-term, design of special entrance gates or modifications to the adult fishway gates. And so that's a topic for later as well. So short-term fixes, we targeted Ice Harbor and McNairy Dams for last year and this year's work. And at Ice Harbor, in the upper portion of the lower portion of the ladder where we have the add-in flow, the diffusers, auxiliary water supply, there's three or four diffuser gratings in there that are unused. The gates on those diffusers...
Hold on just a second. Hey, Tom, just to let you know, Martin's giving an update on Lamprey mods, Ice Harbor, McNairy. So
at Ice Harbor, we have some diffusers that are unused. They've never been used. The gates are damaged and non-operable. There's no flow from those diffusers. There's concern that Lamprey can get through the gratings and get trapped beneath those gratings. So we let out a contract to purchase some steel plate to cover those diffusers, and the project is going to install that steel plate. The issue we have there is the contract was awarded late. The steel plate will not arrive until about February 8th. And so there's a short window for them to install that plate. It looks like they will be able to get the plate installed during this in-water work window, but we're pushing the constraints of the water update. So
will that just be on the Oregon ladder or the Washington ladder?
That's Ice Harbor, South Shore ladder. South Shore ladder only. That ladder will be watered about the middle of next week. And we'll do another walkthrough of that ladder and try to identify maybe some more of those simple short-term fixes. So at McNairy, if you recall last year around March, I believe it was, we talked about a nighttime operation for Lamprey where we lowered the South Shore Fishway entrance gates to reduce the velocity of flow out those entrances. And during the early part of that season, July time frame, we did gain a reduction in entrance velocities at night. But as the summer flows began to drop, tailwater dropped, we began to limit our ability to further open those gates. So for the majority of that study, we really did not see the differential in velocities that we would like to have seen. So we didn't get much of a study towards the later part of the season. Given the number of lampreys, there are no conclusions drawn with that operation. We do have the ability to remove a section of that gate that's redundant. So there's a stationary portion of the gate that sits on the sill of the adult fishway exit. It's an 8-foot high gate. And we can remove that gate and then lower the operating gates an additional 8 feet. But during that summertime, we gain that reduction in flow. It has very little impact on high tailwater conditions because we can meet the gate criteria under those high water conditions. Without that sectional gate, we can meet that criteria 98% of the time. And when we're out of criteria, what that would mean is instead of having a gate seal that's 9 1/4 feet below tailwater elevation, it could be as much as 9 3/4 feet, maybe 10 feet below tailwater elevation. So that would be under the extreme, very high flow, high tailwater conditions.
So the relief then is actuated when you get to the very high tailwater.
Yes.
In this scenario, though, so our tailwaters aren't really that different.
Right? No.
We have 5 foot range.
Well, we have more than that at McNary, yeah. We've got a low tailwater of around...
What are the odds of meeting that given the John Big Dam?
It's less than 2% of the time.
Less than 2%.
And like I said, when you're outside, when you reach that operation, you're really only out of criteria by maybe 3/4 of a foot. Not in head differential, but depth over that gate.
You're still getting your foot and a half.
Yeah. You'll probably be down around a foot instead of a foot and a half head differential. But this is something that we're looking at, and if we... As we get into looking into it further, it might be something we'll want to bring back and recommend that we remove that lower gate, either temporarily during the summer lamprey passage period, or just permanently. And so we'll look at that and put together, kind of a report on what the capability is there.
How hard does it take out a half-day job?
You know, that's something we don't know. That gate probably hasn't been removed for. If ever. I don't know if there's a lifting beam that could be dropped down, grabbed it, and pull it up. The ladder's dewatered, but unfortunately, it's not dewatered in that lowest section. So we're going to put down a video camera and take a look at it and try to get some idea of what's there. That's something that if this... We have a study plan for this summer, another low-flow, entrance-flow study, and it's not worth doing it if we can't get a test condition of lower velocity.
So you don't have to pull it out during dewatering?
I wouldn't think so. I'm it was designed for a lifting beam to drop down the slot, grab the gate, and pull it up.
So it's 2%, that would be... Under low flow conditions or high flow conditions?
High flow conditions.
Would be a springtime deal.
It would, yeah, probably. Our highest flows kind of occur in May, and it all depends on.
Who knows what you're going to have? Something.
So that's just something that kind of a heads up on what we're looking at in terms of trying to get that low entrance velocity condition for nighttime lamprey passage.
I think I'd say is don't throw the gate away.
No. It's possible, Gary, that if we can pull it up, we pull it up to the deck, dog it in place, and when you get a high flow, you drop it
back in. Right.
So, and we'll probably be bringing some sketches and drawings and tailwater rating curves and stuff, and maybe get it on a fitter wig agenda.
Yeah, next month, fitter wig.
You can change the criteria.
It should have no effect on
the criteria.
No.
Hey, Martin, this is Derek. Just sitting here thinking about this. Are you talking about pulling that segmental gate for the entire fish season? Or are you talking about... are we talking about pulling that gate just for the lamprey run and dogging it off to be able to get those reduced velocities? Because if that's the scenario, then you likely don't have to worry about the real high tailwater events.
I wouldn't want to make a recommendation either way right now,
yeah.
Derek, but both of those are options, possibilities.
That's the problem with all here anyway. I mean, if you can maintain the head on that entrance, you just have more depth left.
So that's a heads up on what we're trying to do, maybe short term with improving entrance conditions in the mirror.
they be that if we have fish pump problems that we need to have back then?
At McNary?
No. Not throw it away.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Don't let anybody scavenge.
But I think for next, what Martin's providing is just.
We're just trying to learn from this.
Yeah, we're trying to get our ducks in a row on this, so it's kind of a update, so you know where we're at. We're likely next FPOM. We'll have some sketches so that you can.
The whole intent here is to learn right. How we can best pass lamprey. So you know, can't meet the criteria. We learn that it has a minimum impact for salmon, then we may have to modify the system somewhat to allow both. But this will allow you to learn something for next year. So.
And Gary, I appreciate your newfound interest in lamprey. This is great.
All right.
Well, maybe go away.
How tall is this gate section?
The lower gate section's 8 feet.
So you're talking about removing this 8 foot section?
This, yes. And it's for the most part, it's redundant because the two telescoping sections, are the lower one is generally below or at the level of that stationary 8 foot section.
Okay.
So we'll provide some sketches.
I'm just trying to picture it.
Okay. For Fader Whale, and give you a brief update on Fader Whale. So this was just kind of a heads up on some of the things we're looking at.
Great.
We have a contract that has been awarded for improvements on the upper portion of the ladder, where the tilting wear sections are, and that contract includes improving, rebuilding the bulkheads at that entrance. That's an operational O&M thing. It allows a better safety factor when they're dewatering the ladder. So the contract does include that. It also includes cutting some orifices in the stem walls that support the tilting weirs. So the tilting weirs, there's three or four that are regulating. The flow as forebay goes up and down. Those tilting weirs are built up on top of a stem wall that varies in height from a few inches to a couple feet. The orifices on those weirs are actually constructed within the tilting weir section. So unlike the lower part of the ladder, these orifices are up off the channel floor. So they're in the tilting weir section. And what we want to try to do is provide continuous passage for lamprey along the floor of the channel. So they're not having to go up and hit the jet from an orifice and try to pass through an orifice that's elevated off the floor. We're trying to make it so they can stay attached on the floor and find their way through these orifices all the way up the ladder. Now, we don't have a lot of data that says that this is what they need and that this is going to be successful, but based on the judgment of the folks of the tribes and our biologists, it's a possible improvement for them. So the orifices we're cutting two orifices in each of those stem walls. They're 18 inches wide, 3 inches deep. The downstream end of those orifices, we're putting a stainless steel rounded insert, so it's rounded, no sharp edges. Bottom of the orifice will be ground smooth. There has been the concern that with the flow passing through those orifices, we provide attraction for adult salmon. We've got a small opening. Would salmon tend to hone in on that flow and reach an obstacle and, you know, beat themselves up trying to get through this hole? So we have a monitoring plan in place to video monitor four orifices, two of the weirs, two orifices on each. We're going to monitor those for adult response, adult salmon response, and for lamprey response, although we don't anticipate a whole lot of lamprey this next year. If we see no effect, then we will open up the other orifices. So part of this contract, we're modding the contract now to include gates on the upstream side of these orifices. The season will start with those gates closed, so there's no flow coming through any of the orifices except for the four study orifices. And the other orifices will be gated. This gate is a slide gate. It will be operated with...
And if you look on your agenda, for those that had printed off the full agenda, page 4 is the start through page 9. There are some pictures that describe some of what Martin's referring to.
So, Derek provided me some handouts here. There's not a whole lot of them. There's just a few. But they do show...
It's essentially what's already...
It's a slide gate. Now, the problem with the gates is the tilting weir tilts over the top of the opening. So the slide gates will have pulleys that will go along the floor of the channel out beyond the tilt horizontal. And then the cable will go up the side walls.
So you have to have around both sides?
Both sides.
So you can open them.
Yeah. Actually, Gary, there's a spring that will keep it open.
The third back.
Okay.
That last page.
Are you talking about guillotine here now?
So the third, Gary, third page.
Yeah.
Third page, you're in a second. Sorry, the third overall page. So it'd be, I guess. There's no page number, so page 5 or the third piece of paper, you can see a cable going along the sidewall of the ladder connecting to this gate.
So you're going to pull it closed under tension, then you'll release it
with the cable. And there's really two options that we're looking at, and that's what Martin's getting at, is we want your input on which of the two options to pursue.
What's your pulley route?
It's along the sides on the floor, near the floor,
and up the side.
Up the side when you're out of the range of the tilting wheel.
Go to the second page. Yeah.
And we've looked at a lot of different gate options. Mechanical from the top. So we also have another option. I mean, we looked at a lot of different options. And you know, what we're looking at is, before we even open, they're going to start closed. So before we open them, we're going to have some level of confidence that there'll be little to no impact on adult salmon. If there is, then we won't open them. If there's no impact on adults, we'll open them up. The concern is that as you progress through the season, you may see later on impact that you didn't see earlier on. We have incentive from the tribes and folks to try to get these open, as many open this year as we can. And so we want to come up with an option to allow us to have these open during the bulk of the adult lamprey period. Now, there's going to be some overlap on adult lamprey, adult salmon, and it's going to be a regional decision when we open these gates. So that's the one alternate. Even the four that we're going to test will have gates on them, but they will start in the open position.
So you got 8 stem walls or 8 weirs that you're doing this in, according to this thing?
Yeah, and there's some uncertainty. We need to wait till the ladder's fully dewatered, but yeah, there's...
You're going to put 2 in each ladder, or 2 in each wall.
Yep.
And you're going to leave 4 orifices or 4 weirs open?
Four orifices.
So two weirs. Lower 2 walls, okay.
There will be the slide gates on those.
But you'll start with them open and the others will be closed.
Yep.
Okay.
Monitoring plan.
Yeah. Do we have that?
Oh. No. Derek, did you send out your final monitoring plan?
No, I have it in draft form. And what I'm working with now is we had to get a scope of work out to bid for a contractor to do the video monitoring. Otherwise, we'd be talking about how to do the video monitoring without a contract. And so I'm evaluating proposals for that at this point. And I've built in enough flexibility into that scope and contract to then be able to work with FPALM and Fitterwig to determine what those criteria actually are for continuing operation of those orifices or whether... we need to shut them down. And so I have a draft of that, but I didn't want to send it out until I had a chance to review the proposals that we've we've received.
Did some damage?
Derek's but what the video monitoring plan, the basics of it are to video monitor the downstream side of those four orifices that we will have open and turn around that data as near real time as possible within a couple of days with summary videos that then can be presented to the region and reviewed.
Isn't this a little bit of a catch-22, though? I mean, don't you need to get the plan out and get some feedback on that before you really know what the contract should say?
Well, the contract, correct me if I'm wrong, Derek, the contract is primarily for the video cameras and the installation of the cameras.
Right, but why wait for that? Why not get the plan out on how we're going to monitor, and then that should fit within that. It shouldn't be waiting for that, the way I see it. Sooner is better that we work through these issues.
Where's the camera that
we mounted, I think that, Derek, is that part of the proposal is where and how these cameras will be mounted? They'll be mounted on the downstream side, aimed towards the orifices, so we can see the interaction of adults with that orifice flow.
Derek, do you have a draft you can send out to us?
Yes, I do.
Can you do that?
And we can yes, I can.
On this thing, and that we can get you some feedback, and probably going to be fine, but if there's some turnaround time issues and some criteria on what we see in terms of salmon hitting these orifices that we need to make some decisions on, you know, what says no and what says yes.
And I have some language in there that I'll be looking for some feedback on,
right,
for sure.
Right. I know.
What those criteria are, and the basic language state is in the terms of, you know, are salmon just, you know, holding down in that corner, resting before they pass the regular salmon orifices? Is there an investigation behavior where they're investigating these lamprey orifices but not attempting to pass them? And then the third one is actually an attempted passage through the lamprey orifices. And I have that in this draft monitoring plan that I can, it's been ready to go for a week or so. And so I can definitely send that out.
Yeah, I think I know you tried calling me a while back, and I haven't got back to you.
Well, the camera's going to be mounted on the tilting weir.
No, the camera will be mounted on the sidewall of the fishway. And there will be some brackets and a pole that will, and I haven't seen the final designs or anything like that. And that's something that, where I've built flexibility into the contract where we can talk about how we would like to see the configuration of the cameras such that we can then get back with the contractor and ask them to make slight modifications to what the original plan was.
Derek, this is Tom Lawrence. I know at Fitter we talked about this extensively. I mean, I'm assuming you've basically kind of gone to the blanket, like, read a lot of tapes all the time as kind of your default, and then we can go through the plan and say we can maybe try to parse that back a bit if we need to.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch all that.
Well, one of the big issues we had at Fitter Week was when you'd monitor and what tapes you review.
I mean, yes.
And I don't know if you, I mean, we talked about that at Fitter Week.
The way we tried to set it up was heavily intensive monitoring during the early and peak portions of each run, in addition to when you have mixed species, heavy mixed species interaction with shad or different runs between, say, fall chinook and steelhead or whatever it may be. And that's part of what I'm looking at in the proposals now, is to see how well what the contractors have proposed to intensively monitor versus when they can lighten up on the monitoring, so to speak. Because part of the reason for that was A, recommendations from you guys on how you'd like to see it monitored, and B was just in cost. Is if you have intensive monitoring from April through August, that can get very, very expensive.
So
we've tried to balance the two between monitoring heavily the early portion and the peak portions of the run, as well as heavily monitoring during mixed species interactions.
No, I think that's what we've talked about.
We're anticipating a few fish back this year, so it should be a good test.
Plenty of opportunity.
I'm just curious if you've calculated what the velocity is coming out of those orifices.
We have, and it's not, you know, it's going to be higher than what ideally we would like to have for lamprey. It's driven by the head across those weirs.
Right.
And the head across those weirs varies, of course, with forebay and tailwater, but you're going to have, you know, a higher velocity center jet. You're going to have edge effect on that. That's why we kind of wanted to keep it small rather than just a big old orifice. You know, we didn't want to go big enough that adults would go through.
Right.
That'd really change the hydraulics of the entire ladder.
Right.
So we wanted to keep it small so there, you know, percentage-wise, you had a greater area of edge effect. So our anticipation is that even with the high velocity, we have provided smooth surfaces for those lamprey to stay attached.
Right.
And smooth, flat surface on the bottom, rounded on the sides.
Well, when you put this whole thing together that you're going to share with everybody, the plan or whatever it is, you just put those numbers in there just so we have a reference?
Yeah. Bring those up and have those. But it's going to be similar to the velocities through the orifices, the existing orifices.
Okay.
All right. But essentially today, the key point is on option one on the handle that was just passed out, which is having these cables installed so that we can control, open and close those orifices. On every single orifice, having that ability to open and close. That's sort of the core, after we've been talking about this, that's what we believe is the best option. And so that's where we think we should be going, but at the same time recognizing, do we like to have cables in the adult fishway? And no, we would like to avoid that, but we think that it's a trade-off that makes sense and gives us the best flexibility for us to respond to whatever conditions we're seeing without having to dewater the ladder during the season. Dewatering the ladder during the season seems like a bad plan going in. And so this seems to be the best approach. But there is just, we do have a second option, which would be basically constructing all the orifices and on only four of them having the cables so that you can close them. The rest of them would be plated shut to start the year.
That's the option A in this thing here.
Mm-hmm. I think it might be figure A or option A there, but really our proposed option is to put the gates on every one of the orifices, mm-hmm. start with four open for monitoring purposes, if successful, opening the remaining. The option that Tim's talking about are temporary plates, simple. They're bolted in place. If you wanted to remove those, you'd have to dewater the ladder maybe to knee-deep. It wouldn't have to be fully dewatered, but dewatered to the point where you could get in there, reach down, unbolt these plates, and pull them out. That would require a dewatering of the ladder.
So, you know, the benefit of that is there's less cables, but you also have, you have to dewater, at least partially dewater, which I guess personally I'm uncomfortable with that approach simply because I don't like to plan for a dewatered ladder with a big fish run. So that was sort of the trade-off. More cables, more operational flexibility, less cables, less operational.
Well, really what we talked about was the two plans was what you may have in your FPOM agenda would be three options, but in talking with the projects and talking with operations and Tim, no one really felt comfortable dewatering the ladder during the season to open up plated, closed lamprey orifices. And so what I thought the plan was either put these cables and gates on all of them or put the cables and gates on the first four lamprey orifices, plate all the other lamprey orifices closed, and at the end of this season, if we determine that operating those orifices is safe for salmon, the next ladder dewater period, winter maintenance period, we could then go in and pull the plates off the remaining orifices.
Scott, did you have
a... Are you
going
to open and close them or just to close them?
Our intent is just to close them. And the long-term approach would be either these are successful, they have little to no effect on adult salmon. They work for lamprey. And then the long-term intent would be to remove those gates and those cables out of the channel. It may take 1 or 2 years of monitoring before we're comfortable doing that. We have not considered or entertained the idea of having a system out there that requires continual operation and of gates and whatnot for lamprey. We want to stay away from that if we can. So that's the plan now, is that if successful, they're open. We take that stuff out. If not, we go in there and we close those. And the reason that we're taking this approach to put them all in now is it's cheap. We have a contractor out there to fix the bulkheads. It's low cost to go in and have all these cut in now during this in-water work window versus piecemealing this, doing 4 this year, monitoring, come back, doing some more. So we're taking an approach that seems to support the intent of the tribes to get stuff done, to be proactive, at low cost, and without a minimal effort in research and planning and all of that.
It's only one time. I was wondering, can you just drop a plate in front of it from above?
Well, we actually tried that, Scott. We went out there, and we could start with it closed. And so we could go out there and put some concrete blocks right in front of those orifices and then open them up. That's not a problem. But if later on you see you have a problem getting it back in. So we actually tried that this year, and we built a concrete block as massive as 2 people could handle. And when we got down in there, it didn't work. It would work if we placed it, and we're only concerned with opening it. We could open it and be done with it. But if later on somebody said, no, we're not happy, you're not going to get it back in without dewatering.
We didn't expect this approach to be successful in Portland District, where the guys are a little smaller. We thought in Walla Walla it wouldn't be a problem. But even that, we couldn't make it work. So, problem.
I'm guessing that the run of cable along the bottom and then up the wall is to get away from the tilting weir.
Yes.
So to minimize that horizontal run of cable, why not put the gate on the upstream side?
The gate is on the upstream side.
Oh, okay.
The tilting weirs tilt upstream, tilts forward.
Okay.
We don't want the gates on the downstream side because we want...
That's okay. I got it. That's good.
Nope. I mean, our pitch is, from the tribe, is like, we don't think it's cost much. We think you'd rather do it all now. And looking at the cables, I've heard horror stories about all these cables and craziness. Looking at this is not... This is not that big a deal.
I was concerned about it, but I don't see that. Mm-hmm.
No. And I mean, like you said, I mean, if this is successful, we'll take all this out and we'll just do one smooth thing. So it's basically for a year or two.
What's the cost of these per orifice for these gates?
You see, to be determined.
We actually, we're okay. One, I'm assuming we're going to get a buy-in today that these gates are acceptable. Right? If we get that, we talk with the contractor tomorrow. We mod the contract. We negotiate a price. Our guess, kind of hate to say with the contractor not giving us a price yet, but they're not that expensive.
Well, I can't imagine it would be. But
no.
So I guess
it's not prohibitively expensive.
Newfound difference to lamprey, I would say that if things look good from the initial evaluations, that you want to open these in the season. So I would mod them all.
Yeah.
I noticed skies have cleared, the sun is coming down.
From this
Noah has seen the light.
Martin, I have a quick question on the cable operation. Is the cable able to open and close just like these?
There's a spring that, one way or the other, there's a spring in there that's going to keep them open, keep them closed. I see.
So it's going to retract one way.
So you got a cable for one-way operation, a spring for the other way.
Okay. Add some more cable and make it two-way.
we had that. We looked at some pneumatic and hydraulic cylinders and all kinds of stuff. But
oil and ladder.
Guillotines.
This was the best way.
Yeah.
Simple. The other part of this contract is plating over some of the lower diffusers. So if you go up the ladder, there's diffusers in the lower portion of the ladder. Once you get above minimum tailwater influence, you've got another array of diffusers above that. Those diffusers above that minimum tailwater elevation, we're going to put aprons, plate aprons along the sides, leading from one orifice along the sides up to the orifice of the upstream weir. So those plates are going to be 18 inches long. We did some hydraulic analysis and determined that we still are within the diffuser velocity criteria, which I believe is a half foot per second. So we're okay with staying within criteria. No, Gary, because see, those diffusers were originally designed with wood, 3/4 or 1 inch oak strips. We've now gone to thin steel, so we've got a lot to work with.
So you're covering part of the surface of the against the wall?
Against the walls, 18 inches off of the wall. Okay. And then they transition just in front of the orifices. So as lamprey move up the orifices, they've got the possibility of a smooth, flat surface along the floor all the way. Mm-hmm. Yep, red carpet treatment. So, and then the last thing heads up on is we're building a model at Erdic. It should be completed by end of this month, first week in February. It's a model of the South Shore Fishway entrance at McNary, which will begin to model some entrance features for lamprey passage.
Chance of looking at that in February when we're down there?
The model will be completed. I don't know if we'll have all the operations of that model defined and worked out by then, but you're more than welcome to observe it. And then what we'll need to do, either in a special fitter wig meeting or within a fitter wig meeting, is kind of brainstorm some alternatives, figure out who all is going to be involved with alternative development and model evaluations.
Okay. Yeah, keep in mind what missed my
experience. Absolutely. We meet regularly with Portland District Industry. We've got a meeting, I think, February 10th at McNary. The ladder will be dewatered. Construction will be going on, and so I think Derek will probably take care of that. Anything else?
So can we, on the one decision, FPOM recommendation, I think we have unanimous support on that option of installing all cables, springs, except for Rick. So yes.
Go for it.
Okay, good. That's unanimous support. We're moving forward on that.
Good work, man.
And
Appreciate that.
Yeah, and then we'll bring back that entrance velocity issue at a future FPOM and or fitter wig.
Derek will send out the monitoring plan so we can get a quick eyeball on that. Eyeball.
Got that, Derek?
Yes.
Yep. Actually, if you can just send it to Tammy, and Tammy will send out to FPOM.
Okay.
Great.
You think Tammy's going to be back for a couple days?
Why don't you CC me on it?
Yeah, I need to get everyone that's down with you.
So we scheduled a trip to McNary the 18th and 19th. The 18th holidays are scheduled.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Okay.
I slept all day. Good.
Derek, you're welcome to stay on, but I think we're done with this agenda topic and moving on.
Okay.
So thanks for participating. Okay, we are now going to move into action items.
We can feed your dog.
And
what?
We're actually going to move straight to action item 4.2, I believe, to accommodate some other schedules. So,
action item 4.2?
Yeah, we're just skipping
total dissolved gas issue in the ladder. I don't know if you guys remember, excuse me, back in 2006, Catherine Tackley's here. She presented some of the data that she collected, and since has collected one more round of some data in the ladder. So, I can't talk to it. I talked to Schlinker, so we brought Catherine here so you guys can meet her, and also she can talk and answer any questions. So Catherine's down there next to Sean.
Okay. We brought this up at Fitterwig last week.
Again?
Yeah, it's 4.2.
And?
Yeah, we got to keep hitting you guys upside the head.
Well, now you can get to
2.2
the source. Catherine, go ahead. Talk.
Okay. You know, I talked about this, like you said, a few years ago. I barely got on the schedule, and you guys barely wanted to talk to me, so I'm flattered that this time around you guys actually want to hear something.
We'll just wait.
I don't want to rattle off a bunch of numbers. I'll warn you, I used to work for Mike Schneider, so I can get down in the weeds and talk numbers all day.
As long as you don't have a 50-page presentation,
I'm getting excited already.
So not to bore you guys, I just want to ask the group here, what sort of questions or concerns do you have about gas and the ladders? I know when I presented this data a few years ago, everyone said, oh, well, you know, there's no dual passage problem with the ladder. Salmon can move through real quick. We don't see an issue, and thanks, but no thanks. So why am I here?
Funsies. We have seen times when there's no spill, gas from the ladder creeping down, which happens to go right by where a modular happens to be located.
Yeah.
Triggering issues about potential operational changes. We want to open a corner collector that may be prohibited because the corner collector has no effect on that launch. Right? There's concerns about water quality, basically meeting water quality standards. And that.
Yeah.
And coming back on that, we're wondering, there's more, not so much, we know there's a problem. There. We're more looking at what can we do to address said problem. Is there an easy fix? Is there not an easy fix? What's kind of the path forward, or is something we have to live with?
I've got a little background. It's been a while since we've dealt with this. We know that the gas levels in the ladder reach or approach what, 125?
Even 130, and actually in 2007, I think we had already started the spill program for the season, but we had a hydro lab measuring 160% at the fish entrance, fish ladder entrance.
It was
spiking. But yeah, we were getting some good numbers, and this was it's hard to say. You know, we did this on a dime, and this was not a very robust study. We threw in some hydro labs, and because this was during the spill program, and these were big numbers, much bigger than what we measured in 06. 06, we were measuring 130s without spill. So, and yes, we were, I guess what prompted this, all this research was before the spill season, when the attraction flows were turned off, at night, we were seeing Cascade Island, gas go up and down. It would cycle on and off, you know, mimicking when the attraction flows were on or off. And so went out there, measured in the 130s in 06, and then in the 160s during the spill season. Now this was at the entrance, so this was on the tailwater side of, you know, where the sled
inside the entrance or outside?
Outside. And so there might be some weird eddying effect going on.
Question. The attraction water for that, is it obtained from the surface, from the tailways, or from the forebay? So,
yeah.
Like in fish hatcheries, if they run a well from up high, they suck some air into it.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
we're super saturating the water.
We kind of went up the ladder and took measurements, and in actually in 07, we measured at the fish exit, so up in the forebay, and we were seeing background PDG levels. So whatever's happening seems to be happening at those lowest diffusers. And I went, John Rurisich took me out, and we actually stood up where I guess that auxiliary water intake is up in, on the deck. And you could hear water or air kind of being sucked in. So that's my guess. But
that's not unusual for more than just that ladder. I mean, that's there's surface water, forebay water being pulled in at the washer at the Oregon side.
Right.
C1-1. And I think on the other side of the spillway, too. So we probably have high gas levels in all of the ladders out there. I guess the question is, what's the extent of the problem, and what's the biological effect?
Right. And how much, I mean, I have no idea what it would take to solve this problem, to fix, you know, go out there and redesign something.
Well, there's two approaches here. One, you could just say, well, you know, Corps of Engineers is not in compliance. Mm-hmm. Pure and simple. You're exceeding the gas standard within fish-bearing water, probably, you know, fairly extensive. What's that?
I said the cloud just rolled in.
Another surprise. Another surprise snowstorm.
Yeah, and shut the lights
off. Yeah, but you can argue we do that at Cascade. You know, you can argue we do that with that Kamis-Washougal gauge, and the region wanted to yank that gauge.
Not 160%.
Yeah, but you're measuring it
right
at the spill.
But 160,
it's got to be happening.
Is it on the spill? That's different. That's why I asked where.
You got 30% difference once you got spill and no spill.
In the ladder itself, we shouldn't be at 160%.
But when you get 160, you have to be right at wherever the incident is occurring. You can't get, it dissipates so fast. You're not very far from where that problem is.
Right, just around the bend of that ladder, it's 120, and then it would drop off into the
inside the ladder.
What's
your point? It's inside the ladder.
If you run a gauge all the way up to the bottom of the spillway, you can get the reading.
I realize that, but that's not inside the ladder.
So we're out of compliance. We're out of compliance right at the base of every spillway.
I know. What's your reading?
Where she's measuring is where this whatever occurrence is happening is right at the entrance point.
In the ladder is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the problem is right there, though, so we at least know where it is.
No, it's beyond that. It's inside the ladder.
Where she's getting 160 is where you're going.
130 in the ladder is still a problem.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but if you want to find a problem, it's where the 160 is. You're getting right next to wherever the source is.
So it's spill. Shut off spill.
Know what it is, but that's
the, outside the ladder. Now, what I'm concerned about is what's in the ladder, where these fish are stacking up and we have more delay inside the ladder. That's what I'm worried about.
So is the spill pattern change? We need to change the spill pattern.
The spill pattern's not going to change what's going on inside the ladder.
This is inside the ladder, right? Well, can you direct the water from there? Do you need to build a wall? Or, I mean, that's the kind of
inside
stuff.
Inside the ladder?
Okay.
This is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
No.
If we're going to continue down this track here, I would surely appreciate some kind of a diagram so we can have a directed discussion about where we're talking about. Because it sounds like you're almost not talking about the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. No,
it's outside the ladder.
That's good. I think...
Yeah, it was kind of like some chicken scratches.
And then, of course, you know, right around the river. This is Corbeil. This is your tailwater, and this is where that sled is. So we were measuring right here, you know, right here, and right here. At times, this would be 130%+. Well, 120%. Maybe 130%, 120% up here, and then back here, you know, maybe 112 or something. This right here, when spilling, could get up to 160, so this spot right here. Back in here, you're more in the 120s or 130s.
So just outside the ladder?
Just on the tail race side of the sled.
Outside the ladder, we're seeing the 130, inside we're not. Is that right, Catherine?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this changes, I'm sure, with, I don't know, tailwater elevation, forebay elevation. Like I said, it's been many years, and we didn't have much money, so I didn't spend much time on that.
And you said supplementation water comes from the forebay?
Yeah, this is the school, this is the wet bay, whatever.
So where does it come from?
Have you ever seen any lower gas oil when the auxiliary water was on? See, it's where the forebay is?
These were pretty consistent readings. Where we saw changes was down at CCIW. You know, when we Turtle Island on one side, and then it seems to be. And I didn't really spend the time to look at, you know, those openings, valve openings or whatever, and under what head, you know, auxiliary water feeds these ladders. I never got into it just because there was no interest 3 years ago. I presented this and was like, yeah, thanks. So,
up to the upper core, that can't exceed 120.
Yeah. Well, this is probably a little off, and I can pass around. I have some actual diagrams, but you know, you have diffusers kind of. So, I mean, the major problem is this, you know, around this bend, this kind of last little piece before you hit the tail race.
So, all right. Do we have a report from our caucus?
Well, this
is not going to be an issue for adult salmon if we're at 120% in the ladder. That will not be an issue. That compensation will compensate for that easily.
Yeah. Right.
What I'm concerned about then, what it sounds like the main concern is what effect the gas levels in this water coming out of the ladder, how that affects monitors downstream and other fish protective measures, such as using the corner collector. Are we adding here at a time when we're not spilling to a level that would limit other fish protection measures? That's the issue here.
I'm going to have to say that again.
So we've got how much flow out of this ladder? About what, a couple thousand? Maybe, who knows?
Dave, you said this.
I don't know. I'd say
all day.
Maybe 1,000?
Yeah.
Okay.
5,000.
Because most ladders run around 2.5K. That's maybe make horses. So you've got that much flow that's gassed. That's up to 120%. And that's going out in the tail race. And I guess the question is, what effect does that have on the monitor?
The monitor will cycle, I think this year in 2006, the monitor would go from, you know, 111 during the day when you have the attraction flows out of Bay 1 and 18 to, I think the max we saw was 124 or 126 at Cascade Island tail race.
With their cycling, I mean, this flow is constant. There's no change here. So that's a result of Bay 1 and 18.
Right. When Bay 1 and 18 get closed, that's when the monitor starts picking up elevated gas.
From this.
Okay. So it's compression flow all the time.
Yeah.
So, and then you started to mention the B2 corner collector.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's downstream. It adds gas, but that's downstream of the Cascade Island gauge. So the concern there would be, to what extent are we limiting the corner collector because of what's being seen at the Cascade Island gauge? I would say that doesn't make sense, but apparently it's being done. So
not for that gauge. No.
It doesn't. The problem is that it's like, if that's your managerial point, unless you have another managerial point downstream.
Well, the measuring point's Warrendale.
It should be.
So it doesn't matter. During that time of year, it's gone.
Yeah. This should matter for Warrendale, especially if first power out running so far. Well, not really, because if FE1-1 is doing the same thing, that flow does move directly to Warrendale. It runs right down the riverside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it isn't just Cascade Island. If this is occurring at three of the
I have to look at the Warrendale gauge.
Yeah,
but,
see,
you know,
well, it'd be constant. It wouldn't be up and down anyway.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
Country mixing is moving in now.
Which,
this is a mixing issue. We got the bays open. It's not, you know, and it can be turned off.
Well, I know. I mean, that's why I asked how much flow. We have about 1,000 CFS. You got a river that's, you know, 110 or something like that. Is that really going to cause an issue downstream?
Right.
5 miles or 3 miles, 8 miles. It's Pure Size Island. It'd be for the Chum area as well, which is being managed by Warrendale.
Right.
So it's on the other side of the river.
So as long as you guys don't give us the
issue, gas issue, when you favor Powerhouse 2, is the Oregon shore, because that's where all the gas and trained water stays.
Right. But I mean, this is not the Orient Shore. So what I'm more worried about would be 1-1, you know, the attraction flow that comes out of the Oregon side of the first powerhouse,
right,
to get all the way across. That would be more of the issue here.
Right. So, yeah.
And we need to look at that.
Gary, my point earlier is when she's measuring 160 there, it's because it's still waiting right here.
I understand that, and I'm not worried about that. That's going
to. So it's not a complaint,
Yeah,
you get it. It's not out of compliance. Nice try, Scott. I know you're trying to cut that spill.
Technically, it's not out of compliance, Scott.
When did we run that path?
It's a mixing.
And, you know,
So do you guys think you need to get a little bit more monitoring data to look at how this thing is tracking down the shoreline and at different configurations?
Well, I mean, the key issue here is if we have a little bit of flow that's being directed at a monitoring gauge and that is causing us to cut back on fish protective measures, that doesn't make sense because it's a very small localized issue, then we need to fix it.
Well,
if it's not the case, then I don't see that this is an issue.
Could you also just, the waiver that's put in place, could you always just move that up a month so the waiver would...
That's easier said than
done. Yeah, we just got a new waiver. We're not changing that very
soon. That's going to be hard to do. It's a five-year waiver, so we're
talking about
it. I guess I'm, after good discussion for the last 15 minutes, I guess I'm, it's not clear to me that we have a problem that needs to be solved right now.
I don't think we have a fish passage problem. I think the Corps has a water quality compliance problem. That in the off season, when you're not spilling, but you're maintaining ladder passage, you're violating the state of Oregon water quality criteria. I'm not losing any sleep over it, but the Corps has got to deal with that.
You guys are hanging out on that. I mean, that's the Corps is hanging out on that one. That's,
now, if Oregon never slaps your wrist for it, fine. But today's explanation makes me less concerned about the ladder itself.
Yeah, this is the story I got 2 years ago.
Okay.
And
so be ready for this in about 5 years.
Yeah. Well, that's good because I'm busy on the Willamette with this biops. I don't
We'll give you a 5 year respite and we'll let you get back to your work stuff.
Okay, so yeah, understand there's a core water quality issue that may need to be drilled into, but from the fish managers, there's no problem to be solved.
As long as this doesn't affect any operation.
Yeah, we're still not all clear about
it. I think we'll take a look at the Gorndale gauge in these same time periods off and on and just see if there's anything.
And so if you do identify a problem, you can let us know and we can put it back on. But
yeah,
for now,
absolutely.
We're not having this as an action item to come back to resolve anything. So let us know if you want it back, but for now it'll be off the agenda.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, so.
You feel more welcome this time?
That's her.
I do, yeah. And
I'm not sure who that is.
Catherine.
Catherine.
Okay, so now we are going back to action item one, which is our galvanized grate.
I thought.
And. Cordy?
They're universal, aren't they?
We do have some numbers there in rough draft right now, so I don't have them here, but we did some number crunching on the grading that we have put in the bells already.
Not quite, yeah.
It's looking like around 40 square feet of zinc surface area per 1 cubic foot per second flow will keep us under that 0.026 threshold that is determined. So what I'll do is we'll finalize these numbers and we can send them out in minutes. I mean, I'm sure you guys don't want to scrutinize all the equations and everything. It's several pages worth, but we can add that in there if you want to see.
This is based on North Ladder then. So you've gone through, examined North Ladder, calculated the surface area of zinc, your flow through there, you've got a ratio.
Yeah.
How does that apply then in the next step to... other
so now so now what we figured on the north for that ratio, everything that we put in the east that we're proposing to put in the east will be well under that 40 square foot per one. Now granted, the stuff in the north is 7 years old.
I know, but
so
look at the
to it, whether or not that
the leach rate appears to be fairly constant and well within the leach.
Yep.
Each, or the life of the zinc coating, so I don't see that that's...
Yep.
You did a lot of that background work. I think you're good to go. Yeah, it's the one of the things that occasional checking would be a good idea, I think.
Yeah, so the plan for now, I mean, this winter is too late to put anything in, but for next season, if we put in a big portion of grading in the east, which we'll probably do, we will do field samples again just to verify that we're point for us, but according to, if the leach rate is constant, according to what we have here, we should be well under what we got on north when we start putting stuff into the east side.
Any idea how this applies to other ladders in the system? John Day?
Not yet. We haven't done that there yet.
So I missed the 40 square feet for what?
So we're looking at 40, now this is 40 square feet of zinc-covered surface area. This is not grading because there's obviously a difference. And we're, so in the final, we'll have a ratio for grading per CFS, and then we'll have a ratio of zinc-covered surface area because obviously it's more.
Right.
We'll have that ratio as well. So.
Yeah.
If we need a standard that's applied to something else, say a trash rack or
right.
whatever,
right.
you're going to want surface area and not grading.
Right.
It's obviously different. So
sure.
We'll have
but it's just still a, it's we'll still a square foot
yeah.
per ratio. So
yeah,
yeah that's good.
So we'll have that and we'll finalize it and we'll get it to into the minutes so you guys can review.
Okay. We want to talk about if monitoring post installation, how you do that too, I think. That
yeah.
a little vary of just putting these gratings in and then the first hour of operation you probably don't want to monitor, just want to flush it out.
Yeah.
You know, and then as long as that's in the winter, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
And let things kind of flush out a bit before you start monitoring.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and like I was saying before, the tests are cheap. So
yeah.
We'll just run a bunch of them and see if any pops out.
Thanks, Bob. I think we found our way out of this one.
Good.
Now this is good. With between getting thoughts down on paper and responses, I think this has been a good discussion. It's gone on for over a year, but it seems like we have some resolution. So this is
yes.
positive.
Clouds are part of
the rainbow's back.
Yeah. Rainbow is back. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Bob.
Sorry.
Okay. 4.3, B2 corner collector opening date. I know Gary present already rolled out the memo yesterday. Uh-oh, clouds are coming. Yesterday we did say we would, I realize Scott likely doesn't have an answer yet, but we would check with you. No answer? Okay. Okay.
It'll be a little while.
But
sure.
Do it.
I didn't get the memo yet. If you can send it to me, that would be great.
Tammy sent it to you.
I didn't find it there.
You can't open it? And BPA with all your
no BPA
your
can go
power
can't find it
he can't
emails.
You can't Darth can't
somehow
can't
the
open
email
the
got deleted.
He's gonna find
so it.
I will send that to you after this
meeting.
I mean, you want to sugarcoat it?
So Scott, I mean, after looking at the memo yesterday, do you see a big issue there? Is this just gonna take some footwork on your part? I mean,
it's gotta take some footwork on my part.
Okay. And Jason.
Yeah.
I talked to Jason last night.
Yeah.
Very late last night. I didn't know if I need to have my guys call your guys too so we can start the conference call.
No,
wagon train again.
No.
I don't want to.
No.
Don't do that. I want to?
Let these guys have their.
I just got the memo yesterday.
Okay.
And so I got
you want me to send you a copy of that again?
Sure.
Tammy, do that.
I didn't know you'd need it.
It's sent.
You have it.
But it's going to take time to chop it through the process for it.
DocX okay for you guys?
Yeah.
Windows, you're up to date on Windows?
Do you want to handle the remote?
We're 2003. So
you run out of stone tablets or
something? Gary, do you need any assistance?
This
QA form's
a little slow.
What change?
Change form that eventually you'll write.
Oh, I am?
Would you like assistance?
After 10 pages, I've got to write a damn change form.
No, I can do it.
Just say yes, you'll take
okay,
some assistance.
Yes.
You want this?
How do you tangle doing?
What?
Do you want this or not?
Do you?
Yeah.
Write it. I'm not right.
Did you touch on the gas concern?
I've written so many of these things.
Right, but I mean, it's potentially an issue in that particular instance.
No, so I did my dead small minutes.
I expected it to come out.
Right.
I did not address it because I personally don't think it's an issue. throw it on the table.
Okay. I don't know, Vern, were you listening?
I can't hear you.
Oh, gas. The gas issue in March and April. Right in the corner collector.
What about it?
No, if we open the corner collector to run for Kells, is that an issue for the chum downstream?
Has been in the past.
And on the tailwater.
Yep. Not every year, but it has been in the past.
So I don't think the paper touched on that point. So there's something to consider when we have our discussions.
Yeah, it is. Because once it's open, it's open.
Well, that's as monitored where? At the Warrendale gauge?
That's bigger in the winter.
Not in the... it's not at the Purse Ives.
The Warrendale gauge has been used
right
until spill starts.
But is there somebody running around the saturometer looking for the hottest spot, or is it consistently the Warrendale?
I only did it when we were releasing the spring creek fish. That's what I was out there for, because there was a commitment made at TMT that we would honor the 105% limit for Oregon's water quality standards of water in shallow waters 2 feet or less having no more than 105% TDQ. So I don't want to open that can of worms and start talking about that here, because it's going to go round and round and round and round. But I did go out and I took measurements, the Ives area, Oklahoma Falls, and if we exceeded 105% with depth compensation, we closed down the spill. It happened.
The corner collector.
The corner collector.
So that's it. Running around out there looking for a spot.
Right. But those were low water years, 2005.
2010.
Okay, well, that needs to be talked about. I don't. That kind of compliance monitoring to me is kind of crazy. So if we're trying to find the hottest spot out there.
Well, we weren't looking for the hottest spot. We were concerned about the known chum reds, locations of the known chum reds. And we know they're at Multnomah Falls. We know they're in the Ives area. We know they're at Woods Landing. We know they're over McCord Creek.
So I guess, the tie crane is back.
Good.
Sun is shining over here. So we could use a tie crane to close it if need be if we get there. So it won't be as big of an issue bringing a crane on site or getting.
Yeah, that issue of gas and chum is a whole nother chapter. That's not a paragraph in my memo. That's a whole other analysis.
So we can't completely ignore it, but it's part of the decision on that one.
No, I know, but we, let's get to that point. You know, if you guys are going to use that to stop it, I don't know
that
you are.
Bringing that
but
up,
if that up comes up, then we'll have to deal with all the issues associated with that. You know, what geist is found, you know, the susceptibility to chum, because if this is a chum issue, and not just 105% anywhere in the tail race, because that's what you just told me was that it was chum. You were looking specifically at chum brands, not at what the standard is meant to protect, which is everything out there. So you're running around constantly looking. We don't usually do that. We choose a spot, and we comply. There's a compliance point.
I'm not suggesting anything otherwise. We need to sit down and have a discussion here.
Right, because it's the purpose of this thing is what is getting twisted, I think, a bit. So we need to have a good discussion with Oregon.
We might be able to touch on some of it this afternoon. After this meeting, we can talk.
Yeah, well, I was talking more in terms of what the other agencies got our the fish agencies.
No.
Okay.
We're having a conference.
So I guess the point is here, Scott's taking the memo to shopping it within BPA, but at the same time, I don't think anyone's saying that the gas and chum issue needs to be used as a way to stop it, but the gas and chum issue is an issue that needs to be considered before we take an action on this. At least folks that are engaged on the water quality standpoint need to understand.
Yes and yes.
Yeah. What's going on?
That's what's going on here. Yeah, we know what's going on. Yeah. Okay.
What action are we taking?
We're not taking any action yet.
The only action is Scott is shopping the memo with BPA. Right. And there, it sounds like there is a water quality discussion that needs to occur. And that water quality discussion needs to include an issue of gas and impacts on Chum.
But I don't see that as any reason to not go forward with the change in the operation.
That's what we're considering, but it's maybe limited right. by your
operation. It may be, but that's a discussion that we can have.
That's a separate.
They're separate.
Time. They're separate.
He's talking about procedure right. or protocol of having it open. We're talking about another protocol.
They're going to be both decisions have to be made.
Yeah. So, all right. We are now on track 4.4. Yeah, everything, all the action items here are discussed under updates. So we are bypassing everything and moving straight to updates. Okay. So 5.1, Grizzly Drain modification. Anything to discuss other than the placement? Okay. Tie Crane?
Do you know what Grizzly Drain is?
Tie Crane is, yeah. Went yeah. online operational on the 11th of January. So the contractor is now in the process of demobilizing all their gear around there and we'll start planning on installing the ties by March 1st or soon after.
If they don't fall apart.
Yeah, if they don't fall apart, then you pick them up. That's going to be interesting. So,
you're stuck in the ground.
You know, the cost of this, that's still going to be in litigation for a while. How much the contractor. Yeah, because there was the vent member at the end there, and the paint job. And, you know, but I appreciate everybody putting up with it for, what, 3 years now?
Well, we had such a choice.
I know. Putting up with the lack of a tie frame. Hey, we actually did all right. But anyway, it's back.
When did it officially go back?
11. 11.
The 11th. It broke the bubble on it.
So, we hopefully will not have to pay debris issues with screen cleaning and...
How can you with no flow?
Things will be rosy and cheery at the project.
That's a good question.
Okay. Five...
Yeah.
Ready for 5.3, BGS dive inspection coordination?
I sent out a coordination form. The comments I got back was that everybody was okay with doing the ROV inspection and the BGS dive inspection on the same day, which is next week, the 21st, I believe. So just let me know. That's going forward.
Okay. 5.4, Bonneville trolley pipe coordination.
I talked with Schwartz this morning. He said the contract for that and the Dalles dive, which is the next item, for installation both out. And the Powerhouse 1 installation is supposed to start 15th March at Bonneville. And for the Dalles, it is supposed to start 15th February and go through mid-March.
One transmission, so it'll be the time to bring it up.
A different topic?
Yeah.
Let's just hold off. I've already added one new update. We'll add you as a 5.14.
Any outages associated with those trolley?
I can ask. Yeah,
Powerhouse 1, would that be required to be?
I believe there's unit outages.
Unit outages?
The divers will be in the water. So they
right.
have to have the unit
yeah.
and the one on either side. So
three unit outages, and that's going to last for. And it's going to cycle.
I was hoping there'd be a coordination form on that everyone could look at. But
yeah. Okay.
There will be something about. But yeah. February, March, February, and early March. I think they're supposed to be done by like the middle of that first week of March. Yeah.
Okay. Done?
Yep.
All right, great. 5.6, Dalles lamprey rounding. Corey?
Okay, I didn't send anything to Tammy for the FPOM agenda, but it is in the weekly status reports on one of the tabs. We have two spots that we've put a 2-inch radius on in the east ladder. One is the first weir up from the junction pool, and the other is at the 180 bend in the east ladder. And both of those locations, right at the orifice, is a 1-foot drop that had a 90 bend on it. And so we just went in there and made it a 2-inch radius. And that was cleared with district hydraulics. They said it shouldn't affect the ladder. It should be fine with that. So those are done. And there are two more locations that we're looking at. It's the south entrance. There is a pool area there that has a similar deal. A little more concrete there, but it's just a 90-degree lip into that pool. And so the contractor is in there right now on the south entrance to do that. And the north is scheduled for mid-February.
All right. Great. Thanks. And I think you are also up on 5.7, Dow's Avian Array.
Okay, that one is included in the agenda. What we're looking at there is similar to what we had last year for avian lines that will attach from the bridge to the spillway deck and to the Washington shore to cover everything inside the wall. We were discussing whether or not we should attach to the wall since the contractors are there and they're way ahead of schedule and they could easily put attachment points. But we have no idea what things are going to look like once those start to back up as far as needing avian line coverage and the height off the water. Because if we have any overtopping of the wall, the lines will not work, and then they'll be taken out, and then we'll have big holes.
You'll need to have some sort of supports to stick them up above the wall itself.
Yeah. So the thought was, well, we could put the attachment points there now and just not use them in 2010, and if we find out we do need them in 2011, we could implement them then. The decision was not to do that, because the attachment points are easy enough to put in. So if after 2010 we realize that we need to attach to the wall, we'll come back and do it then.
Just eye bolts.
Next season.
Eye bolts or something like that?
Yeah, they're simple. For the USDA lines, they're only like 300-pound tests. And,
there's an elevation issue still. So part of the reason why we decided to wait on that, not put any of these little bases or poles or whatever, is that we don't know where the problem is going to be, so if we want to optimize the array somehow next year, once we see kind of what's going on,
we may
take a couple seasons. I don't know.
Maybe not this year, but in the future we may see overtopping a little bit of the walls here.
We just want to make sure that we design it right. Should there be a problem?
Then additional to that too, we're the west. Or not the one. The east half of the powerhouse was hit pretty hard this year, Gulf of Asian, right about the time that the juvenile lamprey were coming out. That was during the similar deal up at John Day. There seemed to be a big shift in where the gulls were focusing their attention. And,
the east
half. So that east half, it's an easy grid. The west half was put in a long time ago. As long as we have them out there, we'll have them.
Happy day. Okay. any other comments on that before we move on?
I'm just
trying to
do core.
Oh, we're not done yet. Okay. 5.8. John Day Avian Array Installation. Sean?
Yeah. We kind of touched on this at Bitterwig, and it looks like it's not going to be a problem. But so we're having a kind of a somewhat delayed schedule tight schedule when it comes to installing all the avian lines at John Day. And so the contractor was wondering if they could kind of extend the installation now into April. We're hoping that they can get most of the lines in, but they're, with all the other construction that's going on, especially with delays with the slight delays with the Spill Bay 20 deflector, it's causing complications in terms of making sure that the boat can go back and forth in the tail race. So we don't, obviously don't expect any kind of impacts to fish having a boat driving around in the tail race, but I just wanted you guys to be aware that we're going to probably be installing lines right to the last minute.
Right up to the 10th.
Yeah.
Have you put any opinions?
No.
You're not sure. Is it going to be able to stretch the whole way up? And the material you're going to use, is that going to be an issue?
Oh. The lines?
I hope not.
Yeah.
You guys, don't ask.
Did you guys try a trial run on shooting the line across there?
I don't know what they've... I mean, I think just last week they had their first kind of pre-construction meeting. So.
Scott, that question should have been asked a long time
ago. Oh, yeah. All of those issues have been addressed in the design process.
Haven't tried it in real life.
No.
Scott's got airplanes and those helicopters in reserve.
Yeah, just carry the line across.
Ooh, there you go. You might fit in with 22s. Snap old crap.
So, anyone have any concerns or questions regarding the extension? Or
go forth and
other than the tight schedule and
April 9th, something to
make. Hope you make
as long as it gets done.
If it looks like there's really a problem, we need to hear about it really soon.
Yeah.
See you
later.
Yeah.
Perfect.
A couple lines aren't going to make it up.
Well, I mean, we're supposed to be doing it.
Yeah. I guess the only thing you can do is make sure that the last lines up are not the most important lines.
We're already talking about
those. Yeah. Sounds hilarious. Correctly.
Well, I guess worst case, the very ones farthest downstream are almost outside the BRZ. Can they run those after April 10th? Because we're just going to be spilling 30% first. So.
I haven't had a chance to talk much with Sean about it. So. Right.
One other difficult thing to consider would be to shift to nighttime spill if we use a daytime outages. If you really, really want the lines in.
I mean, if it's a couple hours, we might be able to consider that. I don't think one 12 hours. Hopefully we'll have to get there. Tell them to hire a couple fast boat drivers.
I don't think a couple lines are worth it.
They better not think so. I hope the system isn't that non-robust.
Yeah, remember we have a lot more lines with this one than we had in the past, too.
If you're way short, you get about a third of it done, and it's April 10th, then we've got an issue.
Yeah.
Something to consider as an option.
Yeah.
Yeah, a great one.
Okay. Thanks, Sean, for the update, and Bob, too. Thanks for providing that. 5.9, Little Goose Dewatering Tower. And I put this in order. Maybe I should have started with the bad one first. But the dewatering tower is it's on schedule right now at Little Goose. Work's progressing. The downwell part has been removed, and the new one's being installed. And so that part of this seems like we're on track.
Cement tower there standing right now.
Yep. So that piece of this contract, if you recall, there's one contract put together to do three things at Little Goose. First one was the pit installation, which occurred last year. But then we had a decision to make on the other two pieces, which was the downwell and the outfall. Are we going to be able to get it done? Because once you start, you can't stop. And based on the schedule last year, it was decided it was too risky that we would, move into the fish season. So we just stopped after the pit installation, pit detectors. And so now we have the two other pieces left for this year. Okay, so the downwell dewatering tower, is that part's on track. The outfall pipe is continuing to be a concern. And this has been a frustrating one for us, just like it's not a fun update for everyone else. But right now, contractor is 4 weeks behind schedule. So timing-wise, we, you know, there's still enough time to get the outfall pipe installed. But here's the problem is, if you recall last year, part of the reason why we opted to not move forward was because the outfall pipe, which was delivered on site, when we did the inspection of it, it didn't meet our specs. And so there were portions inside the pipe that appeared to have rough edges and not a good environment for fish. And so they had to refabricate the pipe. And so from a fish standpoint now, there has been an inspection's been done. The interior of the pipe seems to meet our criteria and doesn't seem to be a problem. But the problem comes in that there's a number, it's a double-coated steel pipe, and those coatings are important to keep the pipe from rusting. But to weld all the pieces together, well, you have to weld all the pieces together, and when you do that, it was in the contract that there was going to be some minimal weld splatters, and that created some rough spots, and so that was supposed to be smoothed out. But the problem is these weld splatters were bigger than were anticipated, and they've now been smoothed down, but in the process, it looks like they've taken off some of the coating along with it, providing numerous and relatively large places that we have a corrosion issue that we're concerned about. So this isn't an update section simply because that's what it is. This is an update. I don't know where this is going to land. This is all new within the last, this is an update from this week. Discussions with the contractors ongoing. The point is everyone understands the importance of this issue from a fish perspective, yet we also need to install something that's not going to fall apart right away. So we're working the issue. There'll be another update on this likely next month.
Who's the contractor?
No.
Arcon.
So the bottom line is you think there's still time to have it finished if these things can get worked out.
If we can get these issues resolved and taken care of, there's still time. But if I'm giving the same update next month, then there's a different story. So we'll kind of keep you posted as we move forward.
Worst case scenario, could you put the system out there and get it operational and then come back and do a rust treatment the next year? Not that I really think that's a great way to go, but at least we have the system operational. Go back. 1 year of rust is not great, but it's something that could be recleaned, sandblasted, and then recoated with some sort of treatment to deal with that.
They probably have to take the pipe apart and get it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's killing it.
What's the diameter of this pipe?
It's not a person size.
What was planned in the first place? I mean, when they weld the joint,
diameter
of an exposed corrosion.
36 inches. It's pretty good size.
So
it's over water. They have to install it.
The splatter problem came up. It just sounds like it's a larger issue than every joint would have had corrosion problems.
Yeah. No, it's a good question, and I just got a quick update from the guy from the Corps who's doing the QA, QC work. And so I wasn't involved in the nuts and bolts of exactly what we articulated fish concerns and included those in the contract. I don't know exactly what part of the contract language was violated. I know that they weren't supposed to use a buffing wire wheel to remove the extra splatter, and it was used. And it removed more of the coating than they were supposed to. I don't know exactly the equipment they were supposed to use to remove the minimal weld splatter, but they used the wrong equipment.
Now this is kind of weird because whenever I've welded anything that has coating,
The coating gets destroyed.
It's gone.
For a couple inches at least.
Yeah, on either side of the weld.
And that would have been a corrosion prone joint, so I don't understand.
How were they going to cover that up?
Yeah, what were they going to do about that?
I don't know.
Paint.
Rust-Oleum. In the original plans and specs for the people looking at it from a corrosion standpoint, I don't know what mitigative measures they had in place to avoid the corrosion issues at the joints.
I was just thinking, logically, if you have those, you're going to have those gaps, you must have had somebody had an idea of how to
how to seal those up.
Re-protect it.
That can be done to these spots as well,
right.
I would think. The same type of
mechanism. Also, what are we shielding? If they don't worry about well spot, why don't they just shield where they're welcome?
Well,
I would learn that too.
Yeah, that's the hindsight.
Yeah.
Seems to me they must have had some idea of how they were going to seal up those joints.
Yeah.
They're fabricating this pipe together on land, and then they were going to drag it into the water? What? Because...
It's up above. So.
Yeah.
It's in the storage spot on the other side. But
right now it's on site. There were pieces that were fabricated off site, brought on site, and put together on site.
Let's make sure we use HDPE next time we build a bypass outfall.
So
a lot of it works fine.
That's the update. We'll have likely have more information for you next month. Okay. Five point one one. Little Goose, NP. Let's see, NPE 3 and NSE 3.
Wait. Didn't you have something?
Yeah, we're gonna add Scott. We have. On the agenda, 12 updates. We've already added a pinniped update as number 13, and then Scott is on as another update in 14.
I'm working on a different number schedule.
Yeah, this thing's got nothing to do with your numbers.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll play more.
That was the do not print.
On the email message itself.
Do you have the action items on there?
There's two cancers, yeah, three, and three.
I'm sorry, updates?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're just on opposite sides of the spillway.
Okay.
Okay.
Part of the fish wave.
Little Goose, NPE3 and NSE3. Greg, you're on.
This is totally different. NPE3 and NSE3 have started work on that. Well, administrative work on that. They might now preferred. Alternative is going to be a cemented in place bulkhead dowelled into the sides. Now, the whole opening at NSE 3, DE 3 is about close to about 10 foot wide. And so they plan on actually putting a couple of forms in place, casing it off on both sides inside the channel itself because we can't get in that way. And make a form and just fill it up from the top. It seems like the easiest way to do it after they drill holes into the sides to dowel it in place. That's the track that they're heading on right now, and that's the track they're pursuing. Administrative-wise, they have the money in place. They're trying to find the right contract, the medium form, to get this contract out as soon as possible. There's two type of ways that we plan on doing it. One, regular method, maybe the slowest, but we're right now trying to see if we can attach this move onto a multiple task order the district may have, the division may have. So that way we can get this in place a lot sooner before the start of fish season. So we are moving on forward on that thing on both the two openings there, remove them and put in, what have we got here, plug them up.
If you recall that we talked about this last month and, you know, what do? We just replace in kind? And everyone agreed that they've never been open as long as the project's been there, and there's no plan to have them open. So the best, most efficient way to deal with this problem is just permanently close them with smooth
cement wall.
So
we had another wall there.
That's the path we're on, and we'll let you know as this moves forward. Mm-hmm. But
that's what bothered me about it. Is that's right on the side of the RSW outlet, right?
Uh-huh.
That's that bay. And it worried me how you were planning. I didn't want anything sticking out into the water there or causing hydraulic.
Currently, if we had a good bulkhead in place, it would have been recessed 4 foot. So fish last year were going into the wall,
into
the slot, actually being hit into
that. That wouldn't have been good.
So
this
is a lot better. It's a good solution. It's a great thing to do if we can get it timed just right before fish pass its season. I hope we can do that.
Yeah. I don't know, Bill, you'd asked to make sure we had Sean Milligan engaged.
Yeah, Sean's in on
this. Sean's engaged. We have a
good.
Jack Sands
District
again also is in it too. So.
PDT.
Thanks.
And Jack Sands, the PM. Mm-hmm. We'll keep you updated, mm-hmm. but I think we have the right players engaged on the issue, and we'll let you know as it's progressing.
And the other one's over on the spillway side of Bay 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Other side.
Another.
Further out, and that one will be replaced also this year. The pitcher's up right now.
Okay.
You know, it's leaking also, so it's going to be replaced also.
Yeah. Okay. F-12.
Good news.
Lower Granite, a fish incident, an unfortunate issue happened out at Lower Granite when they were dewatering the ladder. Six adult hatchery steelhead mortalities occurred. And so just letting you know, we let you know when good things are happening, we're making progress like we say we're going to do.
And then you have a barbecue, and six steelhead.
And there's six steelhead that mortalities that occurred as the water or the ladder was being dewatered. The project, I'll just tell you from my perspective, the project has been really responsive on sort of helping us understand how the problem happened. And really what happened was there was some folks in the working as operators that started a process of dewatering, and that process wasn't adequately communicated with the fish
shift.
Folks and with the next shift. And so a section of the water, the lower portion of the ladder got dewatered without communication, and the fish people came there in the morning planning to dewater that, be involved in dewatering that section, and it was already dewatered. And six mortalities occurred.
So, I'm sorry, so are you talking channel?
We're talking the adult channel.
The channel below the thousands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Underneath the spill bit.
I don't think that's the first time that's happened.
But this is what's happened this year.
So two things. Are we going to get a fish memo out on that, the report of enumerating the number, what happened, and then lessons learned about? Because we've talked about this before, about when you're dewatering, obviously you're probably using some sort of pump system, I'm assuming, about trying to leave a pump where you leave suspension water in some case the pump gets left on. There's still some water in there left for the adults. I think we've got some language in the FTP about this kind of stuff. There's not the pressure.
I think
why
there
is.
Is
done? Can we kind of backtrack a little bit, try to figure out how to be sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, comments. I don't think there's a problem in the protocol. The problem here was the protocol wasn't followed. Okay, so that's.
Well, that makes me feel so much better.
That is an abnormal operation.
So. So, anyway, that's the update, and the project is meeting, I believe, later this week.
Probably today.
Yeah, perhaps today, and developing, not only talking through the issue, but making sure everyone is aware of standard operating procedure and updating their dewatering plan after they have their meeting there. So I'm not there to be on that, but that's what happened last week. Okay. 5.13, Stancil was going to provide a pinniped update.
I guess.
This is an added update in case you have an agenda.
Let's start carrying it now on the agenda because it's going to start picking up.
Right.
That's on your.
The states began their hazing this week for the Stellar sea lions. Try to keep them out of the tail race area. Their plan is to haze for about 2 or 4 days a week. They have installed those pier blocks along the corner collector apron. The plan there is to try to keep the sea lions from hauling out there and have them more likely to jump onto the traps if the trapping will become successful. And their plan is to start installing those traps at the corner collector area in the first week of February. We began our monitoring this week as well. As most of you probably know, there's distilleries and a lot of sturgeon that are being taken out there. Initially, the hazing was pretty good. It was effective in taking the distilleries away, but they're back the next day. So.
What kind of numbers are you talking on?
Like birds.
Stellars
for
right now?
For stellars? 8 to 11. Already?
8 to 11 installers in California?
Potentially, it's a scary thought.
Yeah, well, it's California.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. San Francisco.
Yeah, just vacated and said, hey, Oregon sounds like a great place to spend the late winter.
Did you see the sea lion photos that sea lion caves in Oregon? Biggest population you've seen there.
Yeah. So that's mostly stellars.
That's what the newspaper.
These are Californians?
Yeah, because California. We've seen the Lost Over. They're to report out. They lost a bunch of. They couldn't account for a bunch of California sea lions missing. They found them.
Interesting. I know they were off the coast. I didn't know they were in caves.
They're caves and they're
hanging out. Because I think stellars are the ones that breed there.
Just yeah. Keep feeding.
There was a small landslide that created a beautiful beach, and they're just using it.
Okay. Or the one at the Tillamook Lighthouse when they're actually using the steps.
Yeah.
That was impressive. So good news. You guys are really busy out there.
Okay. Well, and it sounds like this will be a monthly update for pinnipeds in the future. So, thank you. And Scott is not here, so
he's on the phone outside.
Okay.
Well, Tammy, did you send the agenda out? I have not got a copy of it. Yeah. All I have is one that says "Do not print."
Can we take a 2-minute break and print off the correct copy?
Did you guys get copies?
Yeah.
So I was just excluded from the list. Thank you very much.
There must be a reason for this.
We inadvertently gave Bernie.
I think there is.
Maybe your virus checker kicked it out.
No, you do what I do.
FPP memos.
Yeah, I got the core into stuff.
It comes out on Monday with the FPP agenda. The FPP agenda came out after.
Was it in the same
email?
No, it wasn't.
This came out the next day.
I have it. I just checked. Never made it.
It's not in
the same. Funny, I got all the others.
Yeah.
Funny. Whose user is it?
Well, it isn't there. That's all I can say.
Didn't
delete it. So I checked that too.
Do you have one that you're making?
Yeah, I didn't update it.
Okay.
I sent Scott in.
Don't worry about it, Vern. Are we done?
We got just.
This is a short meeting, right?
Yeah, it is.
We're almost done.
Let's get this wrapped up in 5 minutes.
Scott,
I don't think we can wrap it up in 5 minutes. But, well.
I should be chairing this.
Scott's out.
There's two transmission outages at Bonneville that I wanted to make you guys aware of. One's going to be on the 27th. We're going to reduce the 230 line to a point where if we lose a unit, we may have to spill. But it looks like it fits right now if all goes well. But if it's during the outage, you have to lose it. You have to spill if I keep the tailwater up.
This is a 220.
The 230 kV line.
230 kV line.
Reducing yard work. There's a second outage.
Wait, what's
the date? What's the date?
27th.
27th.
For 9 hours.
P2?
January. Shouldn't be an issue, just wanted to give you a heads up on
P2?
That. Yeah. The other one is scheduled now for April 15th to take the whole second powerhouse out of service.
That's item number 9. Are you going to screw
up
my agenda?
I don't have your proper agenda unless you gave me a copy.
I couldn't find it. It wasn't sent to me. I was excluded.
How's it feel?
Number 8 according to this agenda.
Okay, so I guess we'll cover that. Number 9.
Sorry, number 9 on the minute.
I wasn't invited to the meeting.
Okay. So I apologize, Scott. The first outage for 9 hours is not the whole powerhouse?
No, it's just limiting the 230 line to the point where we don't have any other units available. So if something goes wrong, you'll have to crack the spillway open during the outage. And so I wanted to make you aware that that's a potential, but it'll only be maybe 15 kF spill, 1 unit's worth.
On the corners of the, we'll just have to deal with the pattern.
Right. But
how long are you thinking?
It's a 9-hour outage. So it shouldn't be a problem. You should never see it, but I wanted to bring it up just in case. The other one that we'll touch on, number 9, is a much more difficult one.
Yeah. Okay.
April 15th.
And we will get to agenda item 8 in a moment. Agenda item. So let me just tell you what the plan is the rest of the day. We have, we're talking about T1 installation at McNary, and then we're talking about Scott's issue with Powerhouse 2, April 15 at Bonneville. We have the Dalles oil issue that Cordy's going to lead the discussion on, and then we're going to have
more
FFU annual fish passage report talking about comparisons from year to year and how to display data. So that's what's on the agenda, and then we're done.
I thought we had an issue with some change forms.
And then we have four additional items carried over from yesterday.
Yeah.
And we'll deal with those at the end. So that's where we're going today for those who don't have an agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz Director.
So we are now moving on to agenda item 6 for those of you who are following along with us. And
we're trying.
It's going to check these out as I go. Where's the marker? Right across Tim's forehead.
Okay, so agenda item 6 is McNary.
L7.
McNary T1 line replacement. And there was discussions occurring in the district on impacts of this T1 line outage. And really what we're looking at is there's a contract that they're getting out on the street right now that will do this T1 line work. That it's a requirement. It has to get done. And the dates right now to do that work is September and October. So when you do this T1 work, it takes units 1 and 2 out of service.
Bad timing.
Unit.
Wow. Why do we have to do, why?
Okay, well, just...
Why are we doing that now?
Why do we come up with these things?
Okay, well, let me just remind you... Let me remind you of what the Fish Passes Plan says right now is March 1 to November 30. We are operating when we're collecting and transporting. We're operating 14 as the priority unit down to 1 as the lowest priority unit when we're transporting. And so that's what the Fish Passes Plan says.
I thought
one was
priority for the
Dalles
entry.
We switch over. They don't have one.
It goes north. North Powerhouse Loading Room. You read the Fish Passes Plan.
That's for temperature. So let's be smart here on how we do this.
Right, well, that's why I'm bringing it here.
As the temperature starts dropping, dumping flow from gate well, operating gate well at unit 1 would not be an issue. So
September is not an issue.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking September, October, right?
Yeah, and we have one of the largest fall Chinook runs heading right at us, and we don't want to have unit 1 off during that time. So, I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Why would we want to have an attraction unit?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but you realize if we follow the Fish Passes Plan, unit 1 is going to be the lowest priority unit.
Mm-hmm.
So when people were asking me questions about, well, what does the FPP say?
Right.
Well, unit 1 is the lowest priority unit. And so... Is that what we want it to be? We can talk about how to do a change form and meet expectations, but right now the plan says unit 1 is the lowest priority unit. So you can see I had a hard time convincing folks internally why this was a bad idea when we're looking at the Fish Passes Plan and they're talking about taking the lowest priority unit offline.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue, and that's also why I said, guys, I don't feel comfortable, even though I know what the Fish Passes Plan says, I don't feel comfortable moving forward on this until we have a chance to talk to the region on it. So that's why we're here.
And what the project is they're building a whole new line, a new crossing at McNary. And so the reason you can't do it now is it's not to the point where you could attach it. And so this is an entirely new circuit, new line.
So it's like the Big Eddy concept?
It's a whole rebuild, John Day to McNary.
And this takes 2 months to do?
It takes 6 months. They're 6 or 8 months to build the whole...
Oh, no, but I mean outage...
The actual unit outage would be September and October.
It doesn't matter. I mean, what matters is what units we run
I mean, the length of time you do that is...
I wanted to tell you what the issue right. was.
Is it temperature related?
No, it's a
I mean,
closeness it's, to the wires.
It may be a humidity.
Humidity. That's humidity what I'm asking. Is the weather related?
So they got to do it during a low
Well, they have humidity. To have a good working condition, but that's when they're going to get to that point. They need clearance between the existing line and the new line, and that's why they have to shut those two units down. It's too close together.
Okay.
They don't want to hurt themselves. Out. Yeah, they don't want to kill themselves.
It's not like double testing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's what we're talking about is delaying this thing to a point when numbers drop. I mean, that's what we need to have. We need to slide it.
We need to see what the effects are if we do that.
Yeah,
well,
I mean...
Well, I guess they're running the whole line is my assumption. I was wondering if they could run... If they start from one point and go the other way, I mean...
Sorry, I don't remember all the details I heard about in early December, but that we were trying to kick around that, and it didn't work very well for them getting it done on time.
So,
but it's a valid concern. Do we want a traction flow that time or not? You know, we haven't... obviously done it in years past.
Right. We haven't done it in years past. I talked to Brad.
Well, if spills off, you're probably at 100-something, and you probably don't even have the other one on.
No. I talked to Brad about his perspective on it before I came here, and he actually is under the impression that having Unit 1 on actually is not the best for adult fish passage. That was his perspective. Then I look at the fish passage plan, and during this time period, September and October, Unit 1 is the lowest priority unit. Now, we can talk about if we need to change that, but I don't want to just say, oh, we can't have Unit 1 off, even though it's the lowest priority unit, and right now we don't have a plan to operate that unit in that time period anyway.
And we haven't run it that way in the past,
right.
So it would be a double change.
How far in the past are we talking?
Several years. The other reason that you'd want to put that out just time of year is that you don't run all the units, and so one or two would be out of service, and you wouldn't end up spilling the line. It's good weather to work in, but it's also there's just not that many units on. And we get down to flows of 80 in September.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need 14 units to do 8.
No.
You get half of them.
So this is it's another way of saying, with following the fish passage plan now, units 1 and 2 will not be operated in the months of September and October.
Is that a problem?
It wasn't highlighted as a problem before, so I don't know if something has changed, but I wasn't aware of anything changing.
I think it's more of a shock from us that once you shut off spill and that kind of stuff, for some reason, probably under a project, we'll usually go back to try to prioritize that point adult entrances. Since you're not
this is crazy, but it's something that hasn't been looked at. Now, what are fish doing? What are we seeing out there? Are we even looking? We're not even looking. We don't have any antennas up. We don't know. We're just doing it. This is stupid. Thanks for picking out a. A good, this is a good one. We don't know that we have a problem because we're not looking. I mean, I think that in the past we ran Unit 1 as a priority up until we changed this, and this was changed for temperature reasons. And the issue here is that because if you shut off spill and you only have the North Powerhouse running a few units, that can't be a good situation for adult passage. I mean, I'm sorry, but you have to prove it to me.
Did we
that's
do that last
a good
year?
Situation.
We were in this configuration.
I'm sure we were.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We passed a lot of fish on the order. I mean, busier than hell.
Right. Now, I guess that's part of this. Is I don't have the 20-year of institutional memory on how this evolved. All I know is that since I've been here, this has been the language that we have in here.
I look at Dave's number here.
I look at the passage this year, and I didn't. If there was a problem at McNary, it certainly wasn't evident to me.
But you're not going to see that because it's going to be in the tail race.
Yeah. Especially
at the ladder, it's not going to tell you a damn thing. Or looking right. at what you see going through the windows, it's not going to tell you much.
It's just are you delaying the fish for a day, several days, whatever it is.
Can you look at the pit take data from Bono?
That's the issue.
that's just going to give you conversion. It still won't give you residence time and tail rates. It doesn't tell you what
the lady... It'll tell you dates, how many days it took them from point A to point B.
Right, but it doesn't give you the how long they've approached times and those sort of things.
So anything more than a day is bad?
I mean, if those temperatures are falling up late in the year, yeah, absolutely.
Late in September. So if it took them an extra day, then it'd be critical.
That's not something that we've worked very hard over the years to reduce these residence times with these ladders, and then to have something in here that doesn't make sense. Not just for this situation. This is beside that. I'm just looking at what we've been doing without paying a lot of attention to it.
If you put some North Powerhouse spill, that sure gets them up that North Ladder real fast.
That would.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Well, it works really good. It kind of spreads the load.
That'll get us through this next year. Then we'll work on the... passage plan for another modify the
there were a
series of management code.
Yeah, we still have
adult meter telemetry studies done, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, and I don't know if they were done at those particular times, but somebody, if Chris Perry was still around, he could go find out about that.
He's around.
Just
wrong
ages.
Well, then he'd know what was done. He was working for the orange line.
He for himself, I guess.
Need his number?
I say he's in the office directory.
Yeah.
One of those. The key is going to be looking at before and after.
Yeah, do you have
a change? If we have some data, that'd be.
Well, we weren't summer spilling back then. So
this is
we were just operating power.
Yeah, but this is September.
And that's what we're talking about.
There's no spill in September.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have been a. Not September.
Wouldn't have been a look.
But that's a good point, Bill, because with no spill, then you could look at what the distribution was.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, did we do this, though? Have we done a test after we switched the power off loading?
We've got fish in the river with tags, but I don't know if there have been. I'm sure there's no antennas to look at approach.
I know.
There to get an idea of what we've caused by not paying attention to our fish passage.
Well, we have a month for a change order for them.
Anyway, it's a huge project that we're trying to get scheduled in this instance, and so they've been really diligent over the years to follow the fish passage plan.
Yeah.
And they need to know an answer sooner than later if we have to attempt to chart and move this, because it was very difficult to get into this period even.
Right. And so when folks are asking me about compliance with the fish passage plan, I open the fish passage plan, it's like, well, geez. We're taking the lowest priority unit off. Right. You couldn't ask for a better unit to be taken offline than the lowest priority unit.
Right, I understand. Yeah, okay.
There was some reason it was developed that way, too.
Yeah.
It just wasn't pulled out enough.
Right.
Well, I know why the... I know that, and that was temperature related. I mean, we were concerned about putting hot water from a running unit on top of cold water.
It had something to do with our TSW operation also.
There's no TSW running then. So, I mean, what we need is when you're collecting, there has to be two unit priorities. One, when you're spilling, and then another one, when you're not spilling, I think. And there needs to be some justification for that. But certainly, I would think you would want to switch some unit priority back to unit one and two, even though you're transporting and not putting fish out the outfall. This is a case of kind of blinders on, you know, when we did this. You look at one side of things.
This is what we approved last November.
Also, I'm going to go back.
We approved this change last November.
I don't remember when they...
So it hasn't been that recent. So.
This is the one we changed for this year.
That's what's going to show up in the LPB for 20.
So that was done in November.
Tim, I'm going to go back and look at the other plans and see, because some of this changed because of the TSWs. And that change shouldn't be a non-spill issue.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
And so right now, there is this change form. So you have the 2009 fish passage plan. We have the language in there. And then you have language that was approved on well, on a change form that's dated October 28, 2009. And on this, it also says during the fish passage period and fish bypass, we have units 1 through 4 or 5 as a priority, then 14 in descending order. And then when we're in fish collection and transport and no spill, so it specifically says collection, transport, and no spill, operate unit 14 to 1 in descending order. So that's the language for the 2011 fish passage plan.
It's too many things going on.
So we have evidence to show that units 1 and 2 or any units on the south side of the powerhouse have no benefit for Adult Passage. That's what we're saying. Are we comfortable with that?
And we approved it in November.
I mean, everybody in here is responsible for this. So
when there's no spill.
Right, when there's no spill.
Have you ever looked at the model when there's no spill here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How does it look, just the powerhouse operating?
Well, you have an eddy on that side. It's just dead flow. It's just dead flow.
But you don't get a reverse flow like you do.
I don't think so. Not that I recall. I just think it's dead.
It's not like it's just not great either.
Well, you don't have any attraction. All your attractions to the other end of the powerhouse, you're relying on your north entrance and orifices to get fish in.
And if the fish happen to be cruising by there,
you're going to have high Oregon ladder passage because that's where all the fish end up, but it's just that entrance, that south entrance, is not going to be used as heavily as it could be. That's the main entrance.
So Gary, would unit 3 or 4 make a difference?
I think it would, yeah. I don't think you have to be unit 1. It doesn't have to be 1. Gary, you know, the further away you get,
maybe 1 and 2.
Of course, Byrne did bring up the point. We're going to be down looking at this very model in about 4 weeks.
We will.
But here's the problem is we have this contract that has got to be finalized. I mean, folks were wanting to finalize it last week, and I said, "No, if you can give me another week, so I can talk to the folks in the region. We're complying with the fish passage plan, but I want to talk to folks about it." So
you have coming back one of the largest runs of probably the U.N. steelhead that we've maybe ever seen. And fall Chinook numbers that are going to be high as well, according to the retap estimates. So this is like the worst year to have an impact on adult entrants.
If we think we have one, but the reason I was asked about 3 and 4 is that a compromise we could live with for this year? Is it change our priority to have 3 and 4 in the mix? Because 1 and 2 are the two that we need out for this thing.
And 2 is out, I believe, is out of service regardless. And so we're really talking about unit 1. Can we...
You know, we just don't focus on those things when we look at the model. We focus on spill. That's been our powerhouses, whatever it is. Because of the momentum issues and all the problems associated with the powerhouse. I wish Mark was here.
As long as there's a downstream flow along that shore, the adults are going to track up that shore.
Right.
As long as it's not reversed, it doesn't sound like this situation you get a reverse there, because you're not. If you're, especially if you're putting out...
Well, what do you see when you're out at the project?
Bay 3.
Last year, after spill, what did it look like? Anybody out there that...
There's more Zoom.
How many units are running at McNary right now?
Looking over the edge.
Look at it. Look at this condition right away. Somebody at West.
Why don't you go out, since two is down already, shut off number 1 and take a look and see what happens.
Well, you'd have to reverse the low. What's the river flow right now? I haven't been paying attention.
125. No problem. I mean, you could do that, especially if you really want to look at it.
You just reverse load, or reverse the operating pattern.
Yeah,
how it
looks. It's not hard to do that.
Yeah, you've got no fish passage right now.
No.
Wouldn't hurt anything. It's a perfect time to do
it. Yeah. Okay. So right now, am I hearing that you're not comfortable taking unit 1 offline and knowing that we still can we have our current unit priority?
I'm not comfortable with the current unit priority.
Right.
We need to accommodate this issue.
So can I just finish my question though? What I would.
I'm just trying to answer. Give me a chance to answer.
Yeah. So here's what I would, my preference would be that we can
We have our current unit priority. We can talk about revising that for September and October with units 14 all the way through 3. And if we think that's, and we can play with that, and we have plenty of time, we can take a look at that in the model, realizing that we can talk about unit priority from 14 to 3. The question here today is, is about 1. Can we take 1 offline? And that's the question. And 1 didn't operate this past year because it was the lowest priority unit. Can we do that again this year, realizing that we don't have to lock in this unit priority. We can still talk about it and look at it, look at the model, just analyzing what unit priority we want between 14 and 3.
Why 14 and 3? Why do you keep saying that?
Because units 1 and 2 would be out of service.
No, I mean the long term. You're talking about there's a long term issue, which is year after year after year.
But I'm just talking about just for this.
Well, that's just a unit 3 and 4 issue. So if we need to look at that. Can we, if we can, I knee jerk, you're probably okay with 3 and 4 as an operation in September. But I'd like to see that, just to make sure we don't have a reverse eddy set up there. Like Bill's talking about, we don't want that set up that would mask the entrance. I don't think you're going to see it, but I don't know, because we don't focus on that. And it'd be a lot better to do it in the project, in the model, because the model, as you know, isn't set up well for the powerhouse.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if you can do it out of the project.
That'd be best.
Can't you just can we come out on Tuesday?
Brad's there. All he's got to do is do it and tell us what he sees.
And throw a bunch of oranges.
Okay, so I'm fine with that, but are you okay if we take a look at it and don't see an obvious problem?
You're kind of shady character.
I feel like I'm buying a Yugo with some Christian money.
What are you selling?
I'm inviting you all out.
We shouldn't trust you.
Can't make it, so I'll trust you guys. I'll trust Brad. I want to make sure we're asking the right question. In September and October, how many units do you expect to be running?
Same as now.
Same as now, okay.
Or less.
So with that number in mind, pick the pattern that you think is going to work.
Here's the way it's going to work. In early September, if we see high temperatures and we're exceeding Tom's criteria in some way, we will north load regardless.
Right.
And unless we make a decision that there's not enough juveniles out there to risk adults. So we would do that. Mm-hmm. If not, then if we're not worried about that, then we would run at least 2 units. Or one or 2 units down on that end would be 4. And then the others would be on the other end.
So choose 1 or 2 units to prioritize, 3 or 4,
right.
And then go 14 on down to the 8 units.
Right.
See what it looks like.
For the test,
yeah. So, use unit 3, north load from 14 down.
1 unit,
whatever you think appropriately. And
yeah, that's probably enough.
Get a bunch of oranges.
Running at about 11?
Throw them up as you can see.
12K CFS for those units. So that put 12K on that side of the river as an attraction.
Think 12's enough?
So, Tim, could you write up what you're going to test?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to get right now. So are we, for a reasonable thing to go out there and look at, and I'm just thinking in terms of unit priority right now. If the proposed unit priority would be unit 3, unit 4, and then 14 in the sending order, is that what you're asking? That's what I thought I heard.
Well, it depends on how much time you have to play around with these tests.
Long do you need per setup?
I don't know. How long does it take?
Usually it changes at the top of the hour. So usually each hour.
And how long does it take to really establish that flow? Pretty quick?
Yeah, it should be. I mean, they're running that way right now. So you just
do one test with unit 3 and north load, and then do another one in the next hour, 3-4, north load, and pick the best one.
And we could north load it for the night before.
And compare it to a complete north load.
But we could set it up overnight where you have whatever units you have on go north loading. So you don't have to do a whole change if you're doing south loading, right?
Right.
So have one ready and then do a change.
So you've got 3 configurations is what I'm thinking. North loading, unit three with north loading, unit three and four with north loading.
Okay. And so with that, there's not much. There's not going to be much time if you run it overnight. It's all set up.
So you just
throw your oranges in, put the north loading, wait an hour, throw with unit three on it.
No, your hour is not going to be enough time.
We can go two. I mean, the biggest thing is having the north loading overnight.
At the top of the hour.
At the top of whatever hour.
Well, I'm saying is you need to let things settle out. It takes you how long, Tom?
Probably take about half hour, 40 minutes an hour.
Half hour, 40 minutes to stabilize.
Yeah, it's not going to take much with these kind of flows.
So it sounds like you do it in 2 hour increments.
You're talking.
You make a change weight, throw it in for an hour.
Okay, that's an engineering decision.
Okay, so three different configurations. Unit three priority, and then unit four priority, and then 14 descending. That's option one. That's one option. The second option is just unit three, and then 14 down in descending order.
The way it is now.
The third option is just north power offloading, 14 down to one. So those are the three operations to look at.
We'll shoot for a flow of 110 to 120.
Sure.
And summer flows sometimes you get down to 90.
Yeah.
But during the day, you're usually doing a little peaking, so you're going to flow about 110 and then go down lower at night.
Yeah.
So I think a shooting for 110 discharge is going to give you the condition you want to look at in a September.
Yeah.
September, October.
Okay, so let me just then repeat what I think I'm hearing. We will do this, look at these three different operations. If one of them, maybe all of them are going to look okay, or one's going to rise to the top, then we'll use that to set our new unit priority for that time of year, and we'll take video of it. But generally, then we can move forward on this plan for having unit one basically offline in September and October.
So when are you going to do this again? Next week?
I'm going to try to do it on Tuesday.
On Tuesday?
Well, I'll be in Riyadh when you talk about Lambert. Thank you very much. So I'll not be there. But yeah, if we get memo, I mean, the only thing, only off rep I see the problem is if this all looks like crap and there's a big eddy there, then we can talk about it. If we can be something we think is agreeable, yeah, that'll be fine for me.
I might, I'm going to be out that way Monday. I might just.
You have a new fancy camera you need to go test out.
All right.
What time are you guys thinking on
Tuesday? Right, that's what I have to schedule with. When we can be kind of going through that flow, the morning or the afternoon.
So, Scott, are you going to have a helicopter ride for people to take a look at this stuff? Like we did John Day years
like
back?
We did, yeah. If I could get one. Well, they've been busy.
I think I'll skip backpack for that.
So, Tim, that's a good
venue. November. Was this the November?
Just send me an email if you're going to do this on Tuesday. What time?
So, right now, let's plan on 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that email will go out to everybody if it's built. This is
the list. Depends on how cold the day it is.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Or how windy it is. It's really windy. Right, I mean, let's make sure we.
It's not supposed to be too cold.
No, it's supposed to be nice. Well, there would be minutes already posted.
Let me work with Skip to make sure.
Sprinkles, maybe some snow, but nothing serious.
So, Dave, I think I heard you ask what time. So, we'll shoot for 9 o'clock. I'll send out an email to everyone to say. Confirm 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Cool. And then look at the November FPOM minutes and see what discussion we have recorded about this issue since we approved the change.
Yeah.
I just don't think we were thinking about
brownies that day.
I will admit it is hard when we think we have a target and then we're making plans to hit it, and then when we go to implement something to hit that target, then it's like, well, wait a minute, that was the wrong target. So I understand that there's so many different variables here.
You really understand what the issue is. I mean, it's one of those things that we normally want to have a traction flow somewhere near the entrance of the ladder.
But what confuses me is, and maybe you weren't at that meeting,
November.
It specifically says to improve juvenile egress, you're going to have north loading.
Right, and it does. I mean, it does for
in October.
No, not for the outfall. For the
October and November, we're using the outfall.
With that many juveniles in September,
it doesn't help you at the outfall. It's the worst thing you can do for the outfall.
Yeah,
it helps you for the outfall. Oh yeah,
it improves juvenile egress over the spillway.
TSW.
But you haven't gotten rid of the spills after August.
So I don't know. That's why it doesn't make sense.
That's why I'm a little confused. All right. I mean, if you're still spilling, it totally makes sense. But when you shut out spill,
it doesn't make sense. The only way it makes sense is the temperature.
And the transport is everything, right? In September?
Yes. Yes.
So usually temperature is down by the end of September.
By the end of September.
Yeah, and then we'd be back to South Powerhouse learning.
But the first 2 weeks of September could be an issue.
Not safety the first 2 weeks of September.
I don't know. This doesn't make sense. I think Tammy slipped us something that day. I'm pretty sure it happened.
That's perfect. Have
to have those brownies analyzed next time.
Well, you could have a wild idea and just go to emergency bypass mode and you'd be on the other end of Powerhouse.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Well, I think we can.
But we're going to transport it. Sort of.
Transport ends at the end of September.
We can move on.
Well, that's more beyond that issue, though, at that point.
Mm. Okay. So that was agenda item 6. Agenda item 7.
Well, that was quick.
Agenda item 7 is ESBS insulation at McNary. We've already dealt with that, and we're forwarding that.
Noah said okay, so
cloud went away. Noah said okay.
Clouds went away.
How about we just install?
We could talk about this more, I guess.
It's not only no, but hell no. That's the final word.
That was the discussion we had yesterday.
Yeah. One more time, April 7th.
So I'm rewriting my memo. I'll send that out tomorrow. I'm getting more comments from our guys, and I'm trying to get coordination with the guys on. Because I guess we're going to take this to REOG.
This is REOG. This is out of
REOG. Yeah,
So what we're getting, though, is I'm sending out to division. In one email, I'm going to send Gary's memo, which is going to remain unchanged. And I will send Tom's new version of his memo, which you'll send tomorrow.
Right. As long as I get something from Jerry, that changes the dates on his FPC graph.
Sure. I did.
So I'll take the original Frederick's memo with the revised Laura's memo, send it on to division, and then they have it for REOG discussion.
And us too.
Yes.
Is this going in front of REOG next week?
I doubt it, but they were hoping.
That was the top.
You need to get to the agenda because
I'm going to take this material to my REOG rep.
It's way full.
And brief them.
Yeah.
So send it to me.
Okay.
The REOG agenda is very full, so you need to get to whoever. I don't know who the keeper of the agenda is, but.
That's what I'm talking with our guys, and we're just going to go on
REOG. And I'm sending it to division. I don't control that REOG agenda. My expectation, my hope would be as soon as we can get it on, we get it on. So I hope it's on.
Yeah,
but it's not my call.
It's the only place that's in any dispute. But they don't know.
I used to have ICMT.
I know. We still got TMT now.
All right. All right, everyone. Okay, we're going to try to get out of here shortly because it is 11:30. And
this is actually an important issue. Washington needs to know, and probably some others, whether or not they release fish for and anticipate those screens to be in or out. If they're out, it doesn't make sense to release these hatchery fish. You've seen my memo, and a lot of the loss depends on whether there's hatchery fish in the river or not.
Can they delay them, Gary?
We definitely don't want to release hatchery fish if Tom wins out of it.
So, Gary, can we tell them to start planning their diet to not?
Okay. Do we know?
It's not my issue.
I would opt for it. I mean,
they're putting the feed bag on them to get them really big, you know.
Well, exactly. So, chill out.
We'll save some money, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. Get a little skinnier.
Yeah.
I think this is a critical thing, too. I mean, they need to know about this.
Yeah, I know. Do we know if anyone's planning to release a lot?
Well, Fish and Wildlife Service has got hatcheries and Washington, Oregon.
I'm going to take this to my REOG person and my USB Oregon person that deals with production because this is an issue that goes right back directly to this thing. USB Oregon.
Well, I think it's suffice it to say, ESBSs could be installed as late as like the 17th or something. And so, if there's some initial conversation that can happen now to let people know, hey, there's a chance all ESBSs won't be installed at McNary until about the 17th. If we can, so you know, if that would be as late as it's going to be. And if you can plan for that, so then you kind of let the dust settle on it, and then a decision will be made. Then if ESBSs are actually in by the 7th, well, then there's really no harm because you're planning on them to be in on the 17th anyway. And so,
but hatcheries plan out their budgets and their feed bills way in advance. And sometimes, because they don't want to have a lot of food sitting around at the end of the production cycle, so it just goes to waste, and that's big money.
Okay.
So if
can
they're going to need
that much.
It could be. So they need to know as soon as possible so they can readjust their feed order, their feeding rates, and all these things. So it's
okay.
That's kind of what Tim's saying. It sounds like is they need to adjust for this year.
And I hope this is. I don't control the REOG agenda. My hope is that this will be on the REOG agenda so that a decision can be made.
If it's not too late already.
This next week.
You know how that's going. Right. These guys haven't dealt with stuff like this.
Well, this is the first meeting we're actually going to talk about how the REOG is going to deal with.
Work, yeah, so they got an issue
in other regions. So.
Probably going to be punting around.
They don't even have a game plan on how they're going to deal with these kind of issues.
Well, we can't predict, but I just have my suspicion.
I mean, who knows? They might totally be on the ball and have it all figured out.
Yeah.
And monkeys might fly out of some other places, but.
Well, I guess I would ask then, from a hatchery standpoint, if we can plan now to say ESBSs will be installed by April 17, is there any reason to not implement that plan and plan accordingly that ESBSs will be installed by the 17th?
We can pass the message that there's a potential that they won't be installed until the 17th, so plan your releases accordingly.
And we may even find out that most of them haven't even planned to do releases until after that time anyway.
Right.
No, I know the Mid-Columbia's released before.
Yeah, but they're not
going to
be down.
Hatchery managers, I just really don't care.
The only time we had it,
it's a liability issue for
folks who are sitting on.
That's right. It's always kind of a liability thing. It's like, you know, having crops, it's like having cut hay in the field. Sooner they can get them out of the hatchery, the better the hatchery managers and all those guys.
Yeah.
Sleep.
Do you have to make any decisions here? Can we move on?
When does Ringgold
release? Want to go home?
Really early.
Now, wait a minute. Just hold on.
Yeah.
This was an FPOM issue, still sliding off, but what I would say is those reps who are sitting around the table that have hatcheries need to contact their hatchery managers, find out what the effect is of this. If they can't delay for whatever reason, then you have another thing to think about when you say yes or no on this operation.
So this is Ringgold and Priest Rapids.
Ringgold, are they even releasing spring chinook anymore?
I don't know.
Because they were doing it for the tribes.
Whatever.
And I don't know if that's... I think that's kind of faded out.
Ringgold still produces for the core.
Yeah. For the core.
Spring chinook?
What fish?
Yeah, so that's later. That's June.
I didn't know that's for the tribe.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea. Highlight.
Leave it at that.
Yeah.
It's up to the reps.
The reps know what the plan is. Well, the ball's in your court to communicate that to your respective hatchery managers within your agency. So, and that's all we can. I mean, obviously, everyone. I would love to have a decision today. We're not going to get there. So let's just inform people on what's afloat, and we'll get a decision as soon as possible. Okay, agenda item 8, and I think this is Scott again, BPA request for Powerhouse 2 out of service, April 15.
We've been trying to squeeze this request in since December, but it turns out the Corps does not have station service, or they're working on their station service. So we were hoping to do it in December, we were hoping to do it in January, and now it looks like the date that pops up is April 15th. It seems to be a poor date. But what it is, take the whole second powerhouse out of service and only run what's needed through the first powerhouse. The other issue that you have to deal with is whenever CHUM have not emerged yet, you need to maintain a tail water of 11.3 or 11.5.
What date? April 15th?
April 15th is what they're proposing.
One day?
10 hours.
10 hours.
You'll need the corner collector on. That should
it'll already be on.
You'd have no flow going to powerhouse 2.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a hit, probably a little bit, because we don't know first powerhouse survival very well, but we're You know, we don't have the corner collector, we don't have the bypass and all those things.
Is this a day or night outage?
In exchange for an early corner collector operation with a two-fish trigger, we're good.
Midnight and April 10th, that's a good
thing. So this is to reestablish powerhouse service?
They're doing switch yard work, and so they've needed to do something where it takes that line out of service to reconnect to something else.
Okay.
One of these days, I'll have to learn really what they're doing.
Do something else.
Yes. But the result is they have to have the whole second powerhouse out of service.
And for 10 hours.
Like, we've been kicking it for almost 5 months now, trying to find a place to fit it in.
So you're sure you're going to be able to do it on April 15th, or is it going to slide?
No, that should go.
Pretty good.
You guys are okay with it. There's plenty of time now to get it done.
Yeah, I think it could be a negative for fish, but probably not.
I mean, just why wasn't it done? We've had this whole winter work period.
Our part's ready to do it. Tammy can speak to the course concerns.
Tammy?
You probably don't have.
How much having lively discussion?
Is the powerhouse is undergoing their station service upgrades. So by taking powerhouse 2 out of service, there would be no station service, and the entire powerhouse would be dark, which is what the chief of operations had concerns about.
Unit O is now running.
Talking to other people who work in the control room, it sounded like that darkness would only really have to be for 30 seconds until you switch this other breaker and restore station service that you get from powerhouse 1.
Right, yeah.
I don't know why the chief of ops decided that was not a viable option, but he said no.
We need Dennis back out there.
How is Lanesville April 15th going to alleviate that issue?
Station service work that is currently going on would
be done by that.
Oh, it's different. It's not related to this switch-up thing.
So you're waiting for this other work to be done, which will then allow not having so much manual breakers.
And I don't know if it's a lack of understanding. I'm sure it's not, but we can get station service from Powerhouse 1. I don't know why.
About
so you have your analysis done showing the benefits and detriments of this for fish?
Oh, absolutely. It's modeled after yours.
As soon as I send you my email, you'll send me yours?
Yeah. We prefer to do it sooner than that.
My concern that I'll have to take back to my people, Spring Creek makes their April release when spill starts. If it's going to start on the 10th, they would probably do it sometime in that neighborhood. But if you're getting ready to shut down Powerhouse 2, send everything over to Powerhouse 1, that could be a very big problem.
For Spring Creek, yeah. You don't have any fish out there.
So
you can do it before it.
I know, that's what I was just thinking.
The 10th through the 15th, most of your passage is done in 5 days.
Yeah, well.
I mean, because you're going to ask for reduced loading on second powerhouse, would be my guess.
Right.
And so you're going to have first powerhouse on anyway, so it'll increase it for the sixth day.
Yeah, I got to do some talking and coordinating on this if this goes forward.
So
well, we need an answer.
How many units? We have a 100K spill on that day.
What's your flow going to be?
Right.
It could be the full other 100 on the second powerhouse if you have a 200 in the river. Or
do you think it would have that much in April 15th?
This year doesn't look like it's very robust, but I can't tell you what week it's all about. Because the shape is the issue. Early April, usually you don't get that high flow in the low.
And the pool restriction is off by then.
Correct. Yeah, there's no tailwater restriction. It's going to be
just, if it's just a couple of units, it'd be no issue, but you're right.
It's a whole powerhouse, is likely. You have up to 100K capable on the first.
Right.
And Scott, when for your purposes, when do you need a decision on this?
Sooner the better.
Like,
we can wait a month if you have to, but we've delayed them, and they really want to get something on their schedule.
So we can have a coordinate this over email if we want. I guess.
Dave is the real critical one. If we need to move it to the 16th or 17th, that might be possible.
Well, there needs to be.
You know, so if you want more days of passage before this occurs, then your flows keep coming up over time. But it's
Can you do coordination request on this thing?
Ideally, we were going to time it with the BGS dive because we have to have most of the powerhouse out of service anyway.
The station service.
But
that's early.
Yeah. Somebody needs to talk to the team about it.
Well, why don't you have a little, just give a couple special brownies.
So, Dave, can you, you're going to check within the service?
So, yeah, well, it's,
what day of the week is the 15th?
The 17th? Or 15th, excuse me. I don't know.
Okay. Obviously, the work has to be done maybe on a Monday through Thursday?
Preferably, they usually work out. So do your guys, I haven't mentioned.
It's Thursday. So it's the Thursday. So if it's not done then, it would have to be the following Monday?
Mine are a little more accommodative than some groups, and so I can see if I can get it brought here Saturday, if that works for you. And depending on what day you're going to leave.
My knee-jerk reaction is more days are better.
Right.
But
if, I mean, if you guys could release on the 8th or 9th, you know, then they would arrive when school started and you'd have the first full 5 days.
Well, I'm sure. Okay. Yeah. And I'll talk to them about that.
We'll work on the time in, but I don't think we're so hard over the 15th is ideally a Thursday work day, but they really want to get it done.
Okay. Well, we'll move on, realizing that Dave's going to do some checking and there's some other coordination that we can do for an at next F-bomb, but if we need to do it sooner, we can do it over email.
There probably should be coordination requests put out on this with comments.
One more thing.
Recorded. Right?
This might fall into coordination.
So this is a fairly big issue. It's probably a detriment to fish. Certainly if we have a lot of fish out there.
That was just I didn't say anything other than look at it, but Tammy will take the lead on this coordination form.
Whoever's requesting it.
You know I'm in the people I'm putting together the form.
It's just your so record.
That's all.
All right, thank you.
River run fish, I'm not too worried about
it. We are moving on to agenda item 9, which is the Dalles oil issue. And Cory.
It seems the oil spill issue that the Dalles are catching back up with them again. What we had out there, I don't know if you guys have been briefed on this or not, but what we had is there's a transformer rehab facility that they put down in Westrick Park next to the sluiceway. And they had three transformers in there that they were rehabbing. One of them dumped a bunch of oil into the secondary containment, and there was a automatic water pump system in this secondary containment that is supposed to pump out water and has some kind of little sensor on it that determines whether or not it's oil. That failed, and so by the time it was noticed, they ended up pumping out a bunch of oil. But the oil, on the bright side, the oil ended up on the ground and in on the asphalt. So they had a big recovery team come out. They've been working on it for the last couple weeks. They tore up all the asphalt, and apparently the asphalt absorbed most of the oil. So they were talking, I was trying to get some numbers out, and I believe they're in the agenda. I'm not sure if they're putting it in
that.
But they're looking at about 5,000 gallons from this one transformer that went in there, a couple thousand went out. They recovered the remaining in the transformer before it went out. And then they gave us some estimates on what got to the river. Now, they had DEQ and a bunch of groups out here dealing with this. And the estimates were like 14, 15 gallons. They were saying a couple gallons. A gallon a day or whatever it was.
You got two gallons a day like, here for 7 days.
That's it. So some did get to the river. They boomed the. Now, we were lucky on this one because the sluiceway was out of service. It had just closed.
No, Scott, you're not getting credit for that.
So, and so what had happened is it got through the asphalt, made its way through cracks, and then they were chasing it, and it got into the soil, and it made its way into the sluiceway. Now you have some leakage coming out of the end gate on the sluiceway. So that's where the sheen was noticed.
Carried to the river.
Yeah, so they put in a whole bunch of booms in there, and then they put booms out into the river, and so it was a pretty big effort, and considering.
But it's not PCB. That's the main thing.
I thought I read it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Not PCB.
Regardless.
That's the main thing.
Whatever the standard oil they're using, they have enough PCBs or anything.
The new transformer standard oil. Right.
Yes.
The old transformer standard oil did have PCBs.
Anyway, lesson learned there. Don't put a pump
with a sensor on there.
But if you do, make it pour out over asphalt.
So is this oil fish friendly oil or the old stuff?
It's the new stuff apparently. We get a new parking lot. So yeah, we get a new parking lot out of the deal. And the south channel, south adult fishway channel is right there too, and we fished it right after the spill, and there's no sheen.
Nothing got in there
at all.
Right.
So
yeah, we talked about that.
That looked good
yeah.
so far. You know, unless something makes its way into it later on. You know.
Yeah, because so I'm sure a lot of that soaked into the ground as well as being absorbed by asphalt.
Yeah,
which does absorb.
It hauled away a lot of soil and all that asphalt.
Yeah.
So that's the story on that.
Yeah. Shit happens.
Another oil issue at the Dalles.
Oh, wait, real quick. What was the date that this happened? When did this happen?
23rd.
December.
What a Christmas present.
Yeah.
Overtime.
Cool. Huh? That's right.
Yeah. Any other questions on that one?
Next week.
Okay. The other oil issue, Unit 14. At the Dalles, they had to take that out of service. They've been seeing some oil sheens coming up in the tail race, and they were trying to figure out where it's coming from. And so they've been playing with units, trying to figure out. Finally, they caught up with Unit 14, and it was a blade seal that had failed. And so we dewatered it, fished a scroll case, and did not fish the draft tube because at that point then they determined, yep, this is the one and it's got a bunch of oil in it. So then now they're going into their recovery effort. And so in this particular case, whatever we have in the draft tube is stuck there until this gets resolved. The oil recovery is done. And
when was it identified out of Unit 14?
I think it was last week.
Last week, Wednesday,
last week.
Whatever day that was.
Okay.
Yeah, last, yeah. So, I mean, we're looking at, but as far as holding fish in there, I mean, we rarely find salmonids anytime we do a dewatering on a unit. If, you know, concern is holding salmonids in there that we can't fish out, we rarely find salmonids in there. Even during passage season this time of year, it would be very unlikely. We normally find a handful of catfish and sturgeon. So at this time, we're looking at probably 2 to 3 weeks before that unit is put back online.
Can you get flow into that area?
There's
circulation
leakage. Yeah, there's always some leakage going into there. There's plenty of water below the level of oil.
What concerns me, what could be there, would be holdover or wintering steelhead. And we know, I know there are quite a few winter in that area. I did a bit of a look at that when we were talking about the sluiceway operation.
Yeah, I mean, it is a possibility.
I don't know what's there, but it could be. They tend to be hanging around more than movement during the season when fish are actually actively moving. They may not be in there, but if they're just overwintering, they could show up. And we had that happen at Chief Joe a few years ago when we had steelhead in that draft tube and actually killed them.
Okay. Well.
So anyway, that's where we're at on it right now. I mean, as far as fishing it, we don't have much of a choice. The oil needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And that whole thing needs.
So you guys can't get in there and salvage anything.
No, not until that's complete. And then when that's completed, you know, we'll come back and we're done. We'll just turn back on. So we're just gonna have to miss that one.
Okay. Well, thanks
and,
for...
And, Miles, I don't know. F1, there was an oil scare on that one. They had actually flooded the pit on it, turbine pit, and but they cleaned it all up. So if there's any discussion about oil and F1, that one was not an issue.
Okay.
You hear that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got those all out of the system now, and we're clear sailing. So, okay. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Agenda item 10 is FFU Annual Fish Passage Report. And I think we're primarily talking about two items. First is that folks want input on comparisons year to year pertaining to night and non-fish passage season fish counts. So I think right now, night counts are obtained on the website, but you have to make a couple other extra clicks, and they're not part of the regular data that you pull up. So that's part of the discussion we're going to have, maybe, although Stancil's going to have the lead on this in a second. And the second issue is just water data, so and wanting to get input on what the regional interest is in these numbers. So those are the two issues we're talking about. With that, I'm going to take it away, Stancil.
The main thing was it was brought to my attention that the annual fish passage report, table 18, some numbers on these are the yearly Salmonid totals for Bonneville Dam. They didn't match the yearly totals when you look at the monthly tables on table 19, even though it's explained in the footnotes that, you know, all these caveats, these include night counts and et cetera. People don't check those things, you know. So the issue was, is I was looking at it for consistency's sake. What's happening now in table 18, from 1994 through 2003, those counts include 8 hours of nighttime video. And so it's really not apples and apples comparison. So if somebody's looking at those figures and trying to do a graph, it's not necessarily comparable. The same thing applies to January, February, and November, December counts. You know, they're not typical, and in many years we didn't have those. That's not a big issue because it's pretty small numbers anyway, so it's really not affecting these totals that much if you're just looking at trends. But I looked at the nighttime counts, and there are a couple of years, like particularly 2001, where for Chinook it added 66,000 fish just for nighttime passage. So it's significant enough that, you know, if two different groups are grabbing different numbers, they're going to have different charts. So what I wanted from this group is, what do you guys want for a table like this that says yearly totals? Do you want literally everything that's out there, or do you want it to be comparable year to year, time frame to time frame?
Well, I know what my vote is.
Well, we do have the nighttime video counts separately, at least for those years, in those annual fish passage reports. So they are there, and they will be available. This may not be as big of an issue once we get our database all in there. You guys can query more specifically to what you want.
Right.
But again, the people that are just looking at these annual fish passage reports, like I said, some guys came back to me and said, this doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So,
I'd prefer to have kind of a one snapshot where we have all that information pulled together, because I think that's more important than the cross-year comparison. I'd like to be able to look and say, okay, this is how many, when we have a number that says number of Chinook that passed Bonneville this year, I would like that to be the overall number. And I think sometimes, you know, like another example of this is Lower Granite Lamprey. And everyone, that when they talk about Lower Granite Lamprey passage this year, always say 12. Now, I know numbers this year were really bad, and 12 is how many passed during the daytime counts. You look at nighttime counts, still really bad, but it's somewhere closer to 75 or something. So, but you can see what happens is everyone just pulls up that one number that's quick and easy to get, and you're not really accurate with total number of lamprey or sockeye or whatever it is that passed the project. I would prefer to have the number be the total number of fish that passed the project, and drill in for details if you want year-to-year comparisons.
So if some years we didn't have that information, it would look low, but that's what we have.
I think you need to have one table where you can look to see, okay, this table appears to be saying total number of fish that passed the project. I'd like it to say total number of fish that passed the project, and then you can drill in, if you're doing more of a detailed analysis, you can drill into the details.
Could you have the table just put gray boxes because we have night time?
Yeah, put a footnote that says, what includes night count or doesn't
include night count. Put gray boxes so you can say, oh, why is it gray? Yeah. Well, that's because at night's included, you know, the dark.
And it's going to vary from species to species. I mean,
right.
Like in Bonneville, we only are counting, like, we're not counting everything at night, so.
From dam to dam, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Or does anybody here even have an issue with it?
Well, I know some people that use these numbers pretty extensively, and I get questioned on them. And I know they're like, you know, they're going to go to the same table and look to see how they compare year to year. So,
to me, it needs to be abundantly clear of what you're presenting.
Yeah, right.
And that's all. You know, okay. I mean, and if there are. I mean, it's very important to look year to year if you're looking at trends. You want those to be comparable,
right.
Apples and apples. So you need to have that identified, and then the other part of it is this total run that Tim's talking about needs to be there too. I mean, both are important.
Right.
So potentially you could have just add another table.
Yeah.
That seems to be the right way to do it, because you have both pieces of information.
I know I've had a lot of comments from leadership in the district, including the commander, who's tried to look at numbers and said, Why can't I get, I want total number of fish passed, and every place I look I get a different number. And for people who aren't drilled in to this level of detail that we're at now, they generally just, they're looking for big picture, total number of sockeye that passed Lower Grand this year. Total, and I think it's important to have that be the number that's obvious, and then you drill into the details to figure out exactly what that number is telling.
I just don't want to have to drill too deep in details to find it. Numbers that we use regularly.
Right.
And that's, you know, comparison numbers are important too, year to year comparisons. So that needs to be right there.
Because
that's typically what we've been using for our 10-year counts. And our, I mean, it all needs to be easily available.
On that nighttime note, we're currently doing nighttime lamprey counts for next year.
We're going to do lamprey counts next year.
Is it going to include? We dare you to ask us to include some on it.
It's not the way it's written on.
Okay, good. Good to know.
We talked about that earlier, and it was sockeye.
We talked about it earlier, but the contract's not written that way. Next time the contract is going to be renewed, it will be.
I'm going to call.
Okay, you're going to listen. Robert, did you get what you...
Well, I think so. From what I gather, you want to leave what's been in there. You want to leave it there. It'll be all-encompassing, everything we know. You know, this is how many fish we saw passing, however many hours and days we watched. And then an additional table that is more the apple-to-apple comparison.
Right.
These are specifically for this group period and typically 16-hour counts. Again, that's not perfect. There are some years we did 8 hours, et cetera, you know, way back when. But
all right. Did you also want to talk? Okay.
Yeah, this one is more my question. This has to do with turbidity, or it's water clarity and temperature data input. And FFU is doing the annual report, and they're finding this huge gap of missing data in there, which apparently is not getting from us through the control room and in the database. Well, the question is anybody using it? Because we never once heard about it until the end of the season. You find almost the whole season is missing, and nobody seems to have been reading it. So the question is, do we still want to do that?
What data specifically is water clarity and temperature?
This is what the operators...
We already provide the temperature data from the fish ladders in the status reports.
Right.
This is a separate one. This is the penstock data, which has been historically the point of measuring temperature in the river. And
when this was brought up last time, it was decided at this committee that we want to keep that. And so we've been attempting to do that, but it hasn't been getting in the database. So, and nobody's been reading it, apparently. So we're trying to figure out, is it still needed?
Do so when I go online to look at water quality data, and I punch up, talk about the Dalles or John Day?
Talk about any project.
Any project.
Yeah.
All of the projects in this business.
But it's
when I turn it on and get a temperature, I think what we're looking at is Tailracer 4-bit gauge.
Got the project? It's got the scroll case.
At the project.
Scroll case.
Scroll case. Yeah, this,
but this is scroll case you're talking about.
This is scroll case, yeah.
Yeah, that's the
and
project.
Then the, and then the yeah. water clarity is taken out in the fish ladder. Right.
And I know we've looked at scroll temperatures before, but I can't honestly say what we've used them for. I can't think of anything recently.
And I think the last time that this was discussed, it was considered to keep it because of historical information, just to keep the database going, which we can still do. But then do we have to try to report it every day, and do we need to get on the operators to make sure this stuff is entered, or can we just at the end of the season plug it all in and call it good? That'd save us a lot of time.
I would say the latter there.
Can you get an alert board that when you put it in, you can actually just download it?
Yeah. You want to write it down like a read?
The operators used to enter it when they entered fish counts, from what I understand. Yeah. That's what Bonneville does.
Yeah, that's what
they still enter it. But the Dallas and John Day, when fish counts were turned over to fisheries, they no longer entered that information into their water data and generation sheets. And last year, Byrne tried to get them to take over that job again, but apparently didn't stay.
Okay. Didn't get far.
So it doesn't sound like there's a huge,
well, a huge need for the scroll case data. Are probably the most accurate data you have for 4-bay water temperature, as long as the unit's running. Those temperatures, that temperature is better than any 4-bay monitor that we have out there, which is up at the surface and it's got swirling. You know, it's got surface eddies and the issues there. So I usually look at scroll case when I want to know what we're really getting at.
Okay, so how different is that than the 4-bay monitor?
Hmm?
How different is that from the 4-bay monitor?
It can be substantially different.
Because the 4-bay monitors are down quite a ways.
15 feet.
More deeper than that.
I mean, here's another data analysis. And we're just going to sit here and make a judgment on something that we don't have any data in front of us.
Collected and available at some point. It sounds like Gary's instantaneous.
What's the difference? How about if somebody could put together the data and show there's no difference? We're not seeing any difference between the Dalles 4-bay monitor and the scroll case. Then
we did that in the early 90s.
Go
we monitored 4-bay fish waste, tail water, and compared the scroll case. And John Day, we saw a degree or two once in a while, but that was it.
It may not be much, that project.
At least at those three projects.
Yeah. At Bonneville, we see differences, you know, because the 4-bay monitor is in the spillway, and the spillway is not running, it's just sitting there. Then the scroll case is a better look at the 4-bay temperature.
Okay.
Or you can go out and stick a probe in a ladder or something. But if you're sitting in Portland and trying to figure out what it is, that's what you do. If there's no difference between the two, if we don't see differences, then why bother? But do you want it consistent, or is it project by project?
When I